is the Rokan Show on 720 WGN Chicago.
Changes.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah.
John Williams just said something about changes. I'm like, what is he talking about?
What happened? I hadn't heard.
Oh, Kev, were you not on that email?
So, your mother has decided that she needs to spend some time by herself.
Was it our fault?
What do we do?
And it's not your fault. It's, you know, sometimes people just grow apart.
I'm going to go be a rebel at school now. Get into bad stuff.
Right. It's time. It's time for you to start vaping, young lady.
Getting a tattoo.
Yeah. As you just heard John Williams mention, there has been a lineup change here at WGN. And Bill and Wendy are no longer with the station. And I just got to say that I'm a huge fan of Bill and Wendy's, and I'm a huge fan. Bill and I worked together for 4 years back in the 2000s, and it was some of the best years of my life. And so he's just one of the funniest guys ever on radio, I think, without question.
But they're just perfect together.
And they are. They just have that. And she sets him up perfectly and does all of the, all of the mechanics with a rock chick badness like you've never heard before in your life. And it's just in a lot of ways, it's an amazing radio show. And so, I feel, I think like we all do, a sense of loss about that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And John Williams is moving to 9 to noon.
Yep.
Right. And then you got the noon business lunch, which is going to be now hosted by Jisoo Ki. And then Anna from 1 to 3. So, kid, she's moving right next door. You'll be able to see her all the time.
I actually get to see her a little bit more than the rest of you, but
yeah,
that's okay.
I think it turns out Lauren's going to be living with her.
I'm splitting the house.
Ro and I are turning the family house into a bachelor pad. No girls allowed.
This is the courtroom of Betty's father. I'm going to tell you something right now. It's going to be something, Kev. It's going to be something.
Anna knocking on the door. Keep it down, Ro and Kevin. We can hear you next door. You're upsetting Lauren.
Lauren's doing her homework.
I mean, it's because I'm the youngest. I didn't have a choice. I have to split houses. Kevin's older. He gets to choose where he wants to live.
I'm doing keg stands in the kitchen.
Yeah. Although you will be coming over during our, when we're having dinner, right?
Family dinners together.
Absolutely.
That's important to us.
Actually, she's working from noon to 7, so there's that.
Yep, that's not changed yet.
Yes, right. So you'll never miss a minute of Lauren Lapka. All right. So that is essentially what has transpired here. And I know this is beyond any of our control, and it was a surprise to many. And so
I say it?
Yeah.
Can I say it?
Oh.
The Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis had a good run.
Thank you, Kev.
Now it's official.
Now it's official. Now it's done. All right. So, but we continue on. And we continue on here at the United Center where we're getting ready for the Blackhawks taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. So today on the program, we're going to be talking to a couple of interesting Blackhawk related people. There's a guy named Rocky Wirtz, and it says right here on my little paper that he's the chairman of the Blackhawks. I had not heard that.
I think I know him. Okay. I think I've met him once, twice,
also,
times 10.
Nick Gismondi is going to be here, or is it Gismondi?
Gismondi.
He's part of the NBC Sports Show.
My guess is he got called that a lot in high school.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a very good-looking, I don't know if good-looking.
He's got a crazy.
He's got a mustache going.
Yeah,
he's doing the whole
stash.
Movember.
Yeah, I don't know that that was the best idea. I got to tell you something right now. So Nick Gismondi is going to join us. And then Brian Campbell, Soupy, is going to be here. He's doing one more shift.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Is he showing up in his uniform? This is like 30 minutes before he's
okay.
on the ice.
I wanted to ask Jeff, our producer, about that because I noticed this, that you have him booked at 6:15-ish. And that, to me, indicated, because last time we had to do this with a player who was going to go skate, they had to leave by like 4:30 to go get dressed. Does he want to be in the locker room?
Well, all right, cool. Maybe he'll show up in his skates and everything.
Maybe he'll just run down the stairs right over there onto the ice.
I like that where they walk in, like they're walking into the penalty box, right. Or they're into the locker room. They're kind of waddling back and forth right. on their skates. It just comes up here.
It's tough to look good walking on ice skates.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Soupy knew how to drop the gloves too, so that'd be kind of fun. Yeah. So don't say anything bad to him because he's going to be in all the pads and everything. Yeah. And you know, I got nothing. He'd rip my head off. It's going to be like an NFL situation. So he's going to join us in the 6 o'clock hour. And Burrish is going to be here, too. Adam Burrish, who is a Blackhawk champion, because we're celebrating the 2010 year. This is one of the celebrations of the 10th anniversary of the, mm-hmm. the great 2010 team.
The start of that very exciting decade run.
Exactly. All right. Ben Bradley is joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Satellite from Parts Unknown. Somewhere on Bradley Place, no relation. All right, let us now talk about this story that I kind of find this hard to believe. I remember this was a big deal when I was a kid. Starved Rock Killer is being paroled. Ben, what can
He's you, speechless.
Ben, what can you tell us about that? Ben?
Hello.
There he is.
Sorry about that. I literally just slid in front of the microphone. I was called safe at home by the ump.
All right. People, we got to know about these things. But, okay, go ahead. So, we're talking about the Starved Rock Killer, right?
Yes.
Is being paroled? Tell that story.
So you may know it a little better than I do at this point. But at this point, this is, gosh, I'm trying to think back to the crime and fill in some of the gaps for me,
okay,
guys.
Okay, so this 60 years ago. There was a guy. Now, I was not alive for this, but I remember when my
March
dad would take me to
60. Yeah,
would take my me and my sister to Starved Rock and scare the hell out of us.
Yeah, who hasn't been there?
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, that's one of the great but most dangerous places in Illinois. It's absolutely beautiful, but people like to literally
they go beyond the walkway think I can fly or I can. I'm suddenly a rock climber, even though I live in a condo in downtown Chicago.
Taking
I live
selfies.
On the 38th floor, so I can climb the rock.
Mm-hmm. And three women, I think was it, three women were killed.
Three Chicago area women, they set out for a hike at Starved Rock and never returned.
Right. And the parole board voted this morning to render a 9-4 decision in favor of Chester Weger, I think was how you pronounce mm-hmm. that, as I recall.
Yeah.
Chester Weger. And he will not be released for at least 90 days. While the Attorney General's office looks at this, expected to have him evaluated for, you know, still whether or not he's still a sexually violent predator. And Weger's now 80 years old.
He's tried for release 24 times. Think about that. Going before the parole board 24 times. Not as though he's busy doing other things in prison, but, you know, this is the 24th time that he sought release. After, gosh, this is the 60th anniversary of those murders.
I mean, how unprecedented is this? I've never heard a story of a guy going 24 attempts and finally getting the parole.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's that unprecedented at all. I think this is just a particularly high-profile case. But people are going before the parole board all the time. The parole board considers a variety of factors, chief among them your conduct and whether or not they feel like you have been rehabilitated. Are you remorseful for the crime? Do you take responsibility? People are let out early for a variety of reasons, but you've got three murders here.
Murders, you're right.
Yeah.
Right. He was 25 at the time. His victims were all in their late 40s, early 50s.
There are people who serve only like 20 years or less for murder.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I know. That don't make no sense.
I don't mean to get you all roiled up about the criminal justice system again when you're trying to enjoy a sporting event.
I know,
but
and I can't. I don't have to, and I can't. I got problems here. I got technical issues here at the United Center today, Ben, and I can't have all the range of emotions that I like to have at any given moment. Because a lot of those are technically induced. So
you're having trouble inducing some of your emotions based on technical difficulties, which is better than not being able to bring about some of your emotions based on chemical problems,
right.
Based on
thank you. I need a little technical assist on my emotions. Anyway, the point is this. That these women, you wonder, they must still have families here,
mm-hmm.
right? So this would have been, essentially 60 years ago, and they would have grandchildren or great grandchildren probably that are still alive, and it just is absolutely It's horrifying.
Well, you want to talk about an interesting moment, and this is from the Tribune.
He would have been 20. I'm sorry, 20 years old. Go ahead.
From the Tribune, after the parole board's decision, Mary Pruitt, one of Wigger's sisters, tearfully embraced Diane Etting, a granddaughter of one of the slain women. They both stood on opposite sides of the parole debate. Their families have been friendly each year during the annual hearings.
Oh. Wow.
What a thing to get together for.
Right. Right. So many years later, decades later, and you have to get together for that.
Right. And this guy, I mean, I think we need to, if this guy can't spend the rest of his life in prison, I don't know who can. This was in a winter day because they were just, they decided, hey, we're going to go down. They're from Riverside in the western suburbs. Wanted to go down to Starved Rock, kind of get away, you know, on a beautiful winterscape day. And again, in one of the most beautiful places, there's a waterfall there, which obviously doesn't freeze over. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. There was a cave near the waterfall where they found the three brutalized bodies. I mean, what this guy ended up doing and how he was able to subdue all three. I mean, it's a horrifying, you know, the details are too gruesome.
Yep.
And yet, here he is. He is going to walk free. I don't understand it.
But members, the Trib says members of the parole board who voted in favor of letting him go noted his age, his fragile health, lengthy incarceration, lack of problems behind bars, and questions of his actual guilt.
What?
Where'd that come from? Who said that?
That's what some members of the parole board noted, according to the Tribune account. So.
Well, it's interesting to note, too, the trial's lead prosecutor died this past May at the age of 85, and it says he had long urged the board to keep him behind bars. So
yeah.
You wonder all those factors and how it concluded to this. And,
I mean, I wouldn't feel safe if he's out.
Well, he's 80 years old.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
He's still bad. I mean, it's...
Still a bad person,
there are plenty of opportunities for appeal along the way, right?
It goes back, though, Ro, and let's set aside the specifics. I know, but I was going to say, you know what? Let's set aside the specifics of this case. Obviously, you know, a triple murder is horrendous, and you can understand people who want to lock him up, throw away the key without a doubt.
Right.
But keep in mind, in theory, prison is not supposed to just be punitive. It's not supposed to just be punishment. There's a reason why it fell out of favor to call them prisons and calling them corrections departments. They're there to correct behavior. They're there to rehabilitate people. Now, you can argue some people are incapable or undeserving of rehabilitation. But, you know, I'll never forget being inside Stateville Prison, talking to a guy who was locked up for murder. A couple of them, actually. It was for a story we did last year. And he said something that was both fascinating and chilling all at once. He said, there's a time where we're all going to get out of here. And would you rather have us rehabilitated or merely and only punished and made worse during our times behind bars? And it was both chilling and
insightful.
I mean,
if you're getting out, that's true. I mean, the corrections piece is for people who would be getting out. A guy who's got a life with possibility of parole, which is what this sentence was. There was a whole moment too back, you know, during the death penalty moratorium and other moments of looking at this, saying that, you know, we can't put people in life sentences and with no possibility of parole, and that was in the late 60s into the early 1970s. And it was the political debate in the 1970s. They passed that. And then after the 1970s, the pendulum, like it does in this country, swung back the other way. And then you had the three strikes, you're out. And you had the return of the death penalty. And then you had states deciding, you know, what it was now, how are we going to do this, right? Because you remember, like in the late 1970s, I should say it was actually late 1970s, because that was the first execution that was going to be in Utah. And they still had the firing squad in Utah.
Oh,
and they had to figure out how to exactly get that done in Utah.
Wow.
And it was gruesome, you know, what they had to do. And then we'll never forget the stories about, you know, who's going to be on the firing squad. And there's one guy with a blank, right?
Yep.
So he doesn't know. But it wasn't like, you know, like up against a wall at dawn. It was like in a room, and then they would have, because
almost like in a shooting range, right?
Yeah, like in a shooting range, and it was in the chair, and then they would put a target, and it was, I mean, the whole thing was just
a target.
Yeah.
That's just kind of going overboard, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, at short, you know, the whole thing was just, And so you stop and you think about all that, and that's where the debate starts often in this country with questions of how is the death penalty. If you're going to have it, how do you do it? Is it too gruesome? Mm-hmm. And then that's why people settled on this whole idea of life without parole.
Right.
And I got a guy who was convicted of murdering these three women. He's getting out 60 years later, but in a really, as we'd call it today, a heater case.
Yeah. So. And I bet you if you'd asked people 60 years ago, you think this guy will ever walk free? The answer would have been a resounding no.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
But you're right. The pendulum does swing back and forth as societal opinions swing. And right. By the way, I can guarantee you guys are the only ones at the United Center having a in-depth, thoughtful conversation about crime, punishment, and the death penalty in the main concourse there, while some other guy is eating a giant pretzel.
Well, the pretzels aren't out yet. Ben, I think that's what you need to know. We can have this conversation. Now, families, the unfortunate thing is families are now coming in with their little ones because they do this kids' hockey thing here.
Yeah.
So they've got, I think, like 8, 9, 10-year-olds on the ice.
Oh, it's the cutest thing ever because they're just like slipping all over the place.
Some mom from Winnetka is like, oh, there's Rokan. Let's go watch his show. So anyway, the death penalty and crime and punishment 60 years ago. Oh, dear.
Kids, gather around for these starved rock killer stories.
Uncle Ro is about to tell a tale.
I had to talk about it because my parents kept talking about it. My dad would tell me the story every time because there's this, because that's nothing but tragedy. You know, they call it starved rock for a reason, right? The history of that particular piece of geology and geography is based on a tribe of, you know, a native tribe basically taking refuge up there.
Mm.
And it was until the last, you know.
You're spooking me out.
Yeah, now we never want to go.
Kids, come on back over.
Kids, come on over.
Back over. Why are the kids
they're
crying?
Crying.
Why are they crying?
Oh, man.
Give some perspective to this story.
It wasn't the Blackhawk tribe.
Stole some kids' cotton candy.
Okay. All right.
Benny the Bull is fleeing.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for arriving. That's the first thing I want to say to you. Thanks for being here. And then after that, we'll see you on the – what are we going to see on the 4, the 5, the 6?
The WGN News today at 4 o'clock.
Is there one other thing you quickly want to tell us about?
Joe Donlan's final piece, he catches up with chaos tonight. This is a guy who 20 years ago had cyanide in the tunnels underneath Chicago. He went to, speaking of prisons, Supermax. Out in Colorado. Now he's back and he's in Chicago and he talks to Joe tonight on the news
at 9. Kids, gather around for a story about Dr. Chaos.
Dear kids, you know what cyanide is and how it actually kills you. All right, thank you, Ben.
Oh,
all right, coming up in a little bit, Timon Bradley is going to join us from WGN TV News. There's a couple of stories that he's working on today as well that are, they're good for the kids too that are gathered around us right now. I think they're really going to talk. The city holiday that's being proposed to celebrate Juneteenth. I think the kids are all going to want to weigh in on that.
Who here has heard of politics and government?
And kids, there is a ComEd lobbyist who has been taken into custody. So I was at, who here knows what a ComEd lobbyist is?
No, not that room in a hotel, but close. They're there a lot.
Oh. All right, so
my daddy's a lobbyist. Quiet, Timmy.
No.
So
Pee-wee hockey players are rolling through the UC right now.
Right, yes, that's right. And then their families are here with their little brothers and sisters, and they're all like sitting, you know, standing at the end of the hall, staring at this, like, what's going on?
Starved rock murder? What are you talking about, mommy?
All right, I want to ask you guys about the White Sox move here because you are our White Sox super fans, the two of you, and I. Yasmin Grandal, is this guy a – I mean, obviously he's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But was that the position that they needed to go out and spend the money on?
Yeah, they need to spend money everywhere. I think it's the best – look, going into this offseason, I fully anticipated the Sox to spend more than they ever have. This is the largest contract they've ever given out in franchise history. It's 4 years, $78 million. He was by far – one of the best offensive free agents out there. He's exactly what they need, too. He led all catchers in on-base percentage, games played, extra base hits. He was second in total bases, third in homers. He was coming off an all-star season. You can never have too much talent. And I realize James McCann won over a lot of fans last year, deservedly so. I mean, the guy, until the last game, he was taking a beating back there.
Oh, my gosh,
some of these younger pitchers are throwing stuff in the dirt. At the plate, he slowed a little bit offensively in the second half of the season. Yeah. This certainly does not mean the end of James McCann by any means. You're going to see both of these guys getting playing time. However that gets sorted out, that's up to Ricky Renteria and Rick Hahn to find out. But you are never overly stocked with talent. I'll put it that way.
But I get what you're saying. You mean, shouldn't we be spending a bunch of money on like a pitcher?
Mm-hmm.
Which is also true.
Right fielder.
But this might also be a good sign that, okay, they're getting their act together. And they even said, you know, we're not done yet. We know we have more work to do.
Yeah, and Zach Wheeler's a pitcher from the Mets who's 29, is coming off a solid year, can give you 180 to 200 innings. He's a guy to keep on the radar. It does feel like the next big signing would be a veteran starting pitcher to anchor a rotation that's loaded with young talent. Dylan Cease, Michael Kopech's coming back this year, Lucas Giolito.
It's sort of a John Lester move, like
exactly.
With the Cubs.
That's what
John
I keep
Lester.
Comparing it to. Yeah. Where, you know, the Lester move was, you know, solidified the rotation, sent a message to all baseball. This sends a message to a lot of baseball. The past two off seasons have been very, very slow, and fans were frustrated. I even saw leading up to this, like, Sox fans were already, like, they were ready for this right away. Mm-hmm. So I think, one, it's a good move because he's a really good player. And, two, I think it sends a message to fans, and it sends a message to the rest of the league. It does. And
yeah, people got to look out for the White Sox this year.
And it also makes it a more attractive landing spot. I mean, you know, the GM meetings were a couple weeks ago, and granted, he's an agent. Scott Boras is the super baseball agent.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were talking about he was basically plugging for the White Sox. He's like, this is an attractive.
So Scott Boras is a Chicago guy, right?
I don't know if he's from here. You know, he's based in L.A. now, yeah. But he might have Chicago roots. But he represents, like, everybody. Garrett Cole, Bryce Harper. Anyway, but he was hyping up the White Sox. You know, saying everything we've been saying. Look at the amount of prospects they have. They're on the verge of championships, of consecutive years of contending for the playoffs. This is a massive signing, and I don't think I'm overselling it here for White Sox fans and baseball fans. This is exactly what the White Sox needed to do, and they did it early. And I think that does send a message to fans where if this was a month from now and the Sox hadn't made a splash, you would have saw really. Fans are getting anxious, and you can see it on social media.
This is not the last splash.
No. I fully anticipate them to spend a lot more money, and who knows? They could be in the conversation with Garrett Cole. I don't know if they're going to willing to spend that much money.
Yeah.
But that's the next big fish. Zach Wheeler, again, has got to keep. That's a starting pitcher as well. So this is a very, very big day for the White Sox rebuild.
All right. You concur?
Absolutely, yeah.
Did I sell you on it?
Sort of, yeah.
I know you're worried. You have not a lot to be excited about in Chicago sports, but definitely
right.
Get excited about this.
Well, I was excited about the White Sox last year. We had so much fun out there all season because it's a grinder team. There's such amazing young talent, and there's great stories in it.
Totally.
You know, I mean, there's some of these kids have amazing. And James McCann is one of those guys, by the way.
Totally.
Who's got a great story. And an amazingly talented catcher, but, you know, great defense, calls great games, great defensive catcher, as you pointed out. He really had to work his ass off in the back half of the season.
Right.
And he had a number of game-winning either home runs or hits, and you know, that's a guy that you certainly wouldn't want to see get lost in all of this. But then again, he's also trade bait, too. I mean, if you're really going to go for something.
Could be. It could be. It's a good point.
I do think that he's important for the young pitchers, though. He's been a very good leader for them to help establish themselves and, you know, get some chemistry in the game together.
Yeah. So I feel, okay, as long as, you know, there's other major splashy kind of things, and Luis Robert comes up, because he's my guy. And I know that you guys get really annoyed by me saying that.
Well, because you have like eight guys.
Yeah. Right, out of nine starters. I called all the position players. All right, let's talk to Tamon Bradley from our friends at WGN-TV. And this is an interesting proposal here, Tamon, that we have some aldermen are asking for a paid city holiday for the 19th of June, Juneteenth, as it's known. And Juneteenth is an historic day in the history of the ending of slavery, right? That's the commemorative piece.
That is it. You're right. It's interesting. Everything is interesting these days in Chicago. June 19th, 1865, 40 of the 50 aldermen have co-sponsored this ordinance to make Juneteenth a paid holiday. I think a lot of your listeners, Ro, are probably going, wait a minute, we pay these folks a lot to be off, right? So there's 12 paid holidays already, Pulaski Day, New Year's Day, both of Dr. King's birthday, Columbus Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And so this would be another one. I would say about Juneteenth is it's gotten a lot of movement across the country to recognize it, to take some time and to reflect on obviously what was a very important day, the day that Lincoln made sure that federal troops were set out to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. So right. It is a significant day. It's an important day. But the thing that's telling is there's no estimate of how much it would cost to pay everybody to not work that day.
Right. This is a misreading of the room for this year, I think is the way I would put it, because we can find a lot of holidays that right now on the calendar, as you just pointed out, that may have kind of lost their significance, right? And if you just add it up, you can find things, and not to take anything away from Juneteenth, because I've almost my whole life I've known people who are commemorated in some way, right? And it's discussed on that day, especially in cities like Chicago or New York or Detroit.
You've
or Los
known
Angeles.
People your whole life that's discussed it. That's great.
Yeah. Wow. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean there's a tradition, there's a folklore tradition that surrounds it, and there has been a political conversation for 30 years. I think it was Los Angeles or something that originally wanted to. There was a movement in Los Angeles. I know New York talked about this at one point. I'm of this mind. You got to take something. You want to put something on, take something off. That's just the way you got to do it. Sorry, we're chock full here. The property taxes are what they are. We got enough trouble. Think of all the money that is now being spent, to try to improve the situation in the Chicago public schools. You got a police contract coming up, a fire contract coming up. I mean, there's a lot of money to be spent here. And do things like this, are they additive to that problem if you don't decide? What did you say? There were 12, right?
There are 12 already. Yeah. So this would be the 13th. I think what Maria Haddon, the older men in the 49th Ward, and David Moore in 17 would say is this would help continue the conversation about equity, a conversation that we want to have in the city, particularly as the cannabis program comes online January 1st. It was last week that we saw that the first people who will be able to have the dispensaries, which are the medical marijuana folks, they were able to pick which zones they wanted last week. And, of course, none of the owners are black. And that is something that the black aldermen were very frustrated with, wanted to hold up the zoning last month, in fact, and to put the help pump the brakes on this program to make sure that there's equity. Now, in the law that the state lawmakers passed in Springfield, of course, there will be loans to minority businesses, and then you have record expungement. But anyway, so there's worry about that being equitable. And so I guess...
But I don't think that this is connective to that. I mean, I get what you're saying.
I think they may try to. I hear you.
I think it's a logical stretch. And to me, I think I'm being rather kind about that. But it is the reality there. I mean, there's a way to solve that problem, which is when you're talking about expungements. This has happened in other states where they have tried to legalize and corporatize marijuana. California just went through this. The people that were like the best growers in California all had criminal records because they were the best growers in California. They've got a generation's worth of experience of doing it. And so they couldn't get the Canadian companies were coming in because the Canadian banking system allows them to invest internationally and transnationally in marijuana. This is a totally this is a problem, and I can see let's just say it. There's been a lot of marijuana street sales here. There must be some very talented people in that business in Chicago, and one would imagine that they may have criminal records, arrest records for sure. And if it's on distribution of marijuana, which is now going to be totally legal, I don't see why my expediting expungement doesn't get a faster track. It just that's just a logical thing.
Well, that, I mean, that takes time, right? So you have to have a judge involved. You have to go back and review the records. You have to have local state's attorneys weigh in and things like that. I do hear you, and there is a different way to do it. But I think you're right, though, about the local weed man. You know, if you expunge his record,
that dude just knows
give him the loans to open right. the business. Because Mayor Lightfoot is, of course, now today warning people, you know, that as the cannabis goes online, that you need to know your dose. You need to protect your brain because this is going to be potent stuff, right? Like this is legally grown.
Don't
now.
I know it, Taman? My God!
But I mean, we all know that the weed man and weed woman. It's 2019, right? they know what they're doing. Okay, they've got some pretty strong stuff.
Yeah, so right.
I think people who smoke or chew edibles, they know to watch their doses.
Maybe
but
I'm just
it's
tell
responsible
this,
to tell people that. I guess
this is not the ditch weed from the 80s, my friend.
Oh,
I can tell you that.
No, there's some potent stuff on the street.
Yeah, right. So you got to know, and sometimes if you know you find the right person who's can sort of you know a concierge, if you will, and there are some people who know how they know what they're doing there. I just think that's one of the issues that as you talk about the equity letting of the licenses. That's the big thing, right? That's what everybody is concerned about, is that, are people getting screwed out of this deal because they weren't part of the initial business plan that went in, and they're basically taking an economic driver, though it is a black market economic driver, but they're still taking that cash out of those neighborhoods. And does that mean that they're going to have to move over to different drugs, or will there be more violence because there's more fighting over, less resource and all that?
Well, and if your intention, Ro, is equity, and in fact the first people to open their doors are going to be the medical marijuana shops, that's not equitable because all of those owners are white, and so you know.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there for one second. It is equitable in the sense that those people all put up a huge investment and a huge risk, and now you can't let them after those people put a $250,000 non-refundable
right.
application fee in,
right.
and now you're going to tell them that they can get. They can literally have within a few blocks of them, have a guy that didn't go through any of that risk.
I mean, that's... And they obviously know what they're doing, right, because they've proven that since the program's been online,
right.
the medical program. No, I hear all of that. But, again, the concern is that, you know, there was a war on drugs. A lot of people went to prison for, the small-level possessions, and they got their records ruined. Their lives were ruined. Because something that's now more socially acceptable and will be legal for adults on January 1st, you want them to have a piece of the business right out of the gate. That's what a lot of people are arguing.
I get it. All right, Taman Bradley, the WGN-TV newsroom. That's where all of this is happening. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good checking in with you guys.
All right, see him and all of those associated news shows, 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. 12 and 14. I think he's also going to be
a lot of news.
There's a lot of news at Channel 9. That's all I know. All right. Coming up on the program in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to go to Washington, and our Washington correspondent David Holmes is there, and we're going to talk to him about what happened. This Fiona Hill was up on Capitol Hill today. I don't know if anybody got a chance to see that. She was a British woman. It was this very like a James Bond movie, what we were watching.
Oh
yeah. And she basically didn't take any crap from anybody. She didn't take any crap from the Republicans. She didn't take any crap from the Democrats. She was like a badass. In the greatest sense of that term.
You're a pro at the name now.
Yeah. I want it, but myself, I'm looking at a trencher. I'm actually looking at a used trencher because I don't know if I can afford the new
one.
Some
trenching in the Gold Coast
yeah,
area,
Yeah, some trenching.
Yeah.
Now, a cable plow is nice, but I don't really need it until I get the trench. I can't really do anything with that.
Right.
So I was going to build the trench first, and then I was going to do the cabling. And a directional drill is always useful because you never know which way you got to go, right?
Love a good directional drill.
So that's the thing I like the most. All right, joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline, Jesse Turner is a Washington correspondent for Nexstar in the Washington, D.C. Bureau. And, Jesse, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, so let's talk about today. This was actually, in terms of entertainment, at least, in terms of staying awake during the testimony.
Not needing to chug giant cups of coffee in the background.
Right, and just trying to keep up with what it was. I thought that this was the most entertaining testimony, because you had David Holmes, who was an embassy official, but then Dr. Fiona Hill, who's British-born, but has worked for the United States State Department, and she's an expert in Russian affairs and Russian-Ukrainian affairs, and sort of that whole part of the world. And she didn't take any crap from anybody, did she?
She did not, and she kept a very calm demeanor through it all as well. While she was getting her point across, she started off really strong, didn't mince words at all in her opening testimony. She said, "Some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia did not conduct a campaign against our country, and that perhaps somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did." She says, "This is a fictional narrative." And then Republicans were quick to jump on that, saying, "Hey, wait, you know, this 2018 report shows that, you know, we do say that Russia interfered." But then you had people bring up, well, you know, this is President Trump. This is the narrative, though, that Giuliani has been pushing. And we were hearing even from Hill that some of President Trump's senior advisors told him that Ukraine did not seek to interfere in the 2016 elections. One of the Democrats said, "Did Trump disregard that advice and listen to Giuliani instead?" She says that appears to be the case. And I also thought it was interesting when she broke down those irregular channels of foreign policy that we've heard brought up before. I think she explained it kind of in the most concise way. She was saying that you have Ambassador Sondland, that he was right, that he wasn't coordinating with her because she wasn't doing the same thing that he was doing. She said that he was being involved in a domestic political errand, and she was being involved in national security foreign policy. She had something that kind of stuck with me, too. I think it's kind of like, you know, you have your colleagues, you're all working on one goal, but then you see this one colleague going to other meetings, gathering other information, and you're not sure what they're doing. And then when you ask them about it, they were, you know, "Who's directing you to do this?" And she says, and he or she says, "Our boss." And that's what Sondland told her. She said, "Well, President Trump is telling me to do all of this." And so I think she really broke down kind of the confusion of those two channels as well.
Jesse, I think you hit it exactly right, too, which is that she was so calm and she was so specific and direct and deliberate in her testimony. She was, without question, the most compelling and almost impeachable witness. And, you know, you got a lot of people on the right side of the aisle there that were really trying to, you know, you've seen Jim Jordan from Ohio and some others along the way who've been, you know, pretty intense. And even though some of them got, you know, kind of pugilistic with her, she just stood there. I mean, it was like a James Bond moment is sort of the way I looked at it. And so I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Republicans are kind of coming out of this and saying, "Hey, you know, we proved that there wasn't, you know, the Ukraine didn't have, you know, they got their funding and they didn't have to have the meeting and all, you know, all these different things and the Ukrainian president said there was no pressure." It's the same. It's basically the same things coming in and going out. But if you want to get a sense of the flavor of what happened, I know there will be a bunch of stories tonight. And, of course, WGN-TV is going to have a bunch of them as well. And you can take a look at some of this on YouTube and see what it was like. Because it was theater, sort of international intrigue theater at its best, but it was all real. Thank you so much, Jesse. Appreciate it. Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Sure.
Jesse Turner, Washington correspondent for Nexstar DC Bureau. Hey, I want to talk to our friend Giza Gook, who is he's over at the director of astronomy over at the Adler. And there's a reason that we want to talk to him, because this tonight, he is going to be a pretty spectacular light show in the sky if these clouds ever move out of the way. That could be a bit of a problem. But explain what's going on here. There's like some strange meteor shower tonight, right?
That's right. So there's the meteor shower called the Alpha Monocerotids, and the constellation Monoceros, the unicorn.
Oh.
So you can think of them as unicorn meteors. It's sort of fun.
This is not very... obviously, that means they're not very common. This is in sort of an irregular orbit, right? Is that the issue here? And so This is an unusual appearance.
Yeah, so it's a very thin stream of these particles. And so it doesn't always hit the Earth. When the Earth goes by the stream, sometimes the stream is sort of flopped out of the way a little bit because of the impulse of the other planets. But sometimes things are just aligned right, and we go right through the stream. And so we did that, I think, last time in 1995, and we got more than 400 meters per hour.
What's the best time for us to see? So what's the time period we're looking at here?
The peak is going to be, if you're a Chicagoland listener, it's going to be at 10:50 p.m. So that's not too bad. It'd be towards the east.
So I'm going to crawl up at the top of my roof. That's very safe, I'm told.
So is it visually different?
Perfect.
Is it visually different than most meteor showers?
Not really. Okay. There'll be more of them. They'll be sort of more intense. Maybe a little bit fainter, some of them, but a lot more of them. They'd be coming from low in the east, maybe a hand width above the horizon. So it's pretty spectacular if the clouds will go away.
Depends on your hand. Hey, but we get a little bit of an advantage because it's the lake, and it's dark over the lake. You're not going to get all that
That's right.
Light pollution from the city. So it's going to be lake makes for a nice stage, right?
Absolutely. So the best thing would be go to the lakefront, get some nice, sort of lounge chair type thing to lie back and look at the skies, dress warmly, if the clouds would go away.
How long will it last?
About a little less than an hour. So the best thing would be to get there maybe at like 10:15, and if the skies clear up, and right now it's not looking good, but if the skies clear up, then you might start seeing things, and then it would sort of peak towards 10:50 or so, and then sort of decline again in the next half hour.
Okay.
We're not absolutely sure of the time, so that's why it's sort of good to get there a little earlier.
Oh, okay. Well, shouldn't we be sure of the time? Does this thing move in? How do we not know that? I mean, obviously the clouds and all that, and we believe that there will be a cloud break tonight. So we believe that there's an opportunity to see this, but partly cloudy at least tonight. But, I mean, there's not... It seems like so much stuff in astronomy is so exact in terms of timing. Is there a reason that this isn't? Is it because it's so widespread?
Well, it's because the stream is so thin. Think of it sort of as a thin ribbon looping around the whole sun and then going out again. And the Earth, that ribbon is sort of wobbling around due to the influence of the other planets. And if the Earth sort of goes right through the ribbon, then you get a meteor storm. If it doesn't, then you won't get one. And exactly where the ribbon is, since it's wobbling around, it's pretty difficult to predict because we can't actually see the ribbon. The only times we've sort of measured it are back in, I think it was 1995, 1924, and a couple other times. So that's the only times we went through the ribbon before.
Let me ask you one more question, too. I scared everybody on the show on Tuesday because we were going to have a near end of life, Earth extinction kind of moment. There's an asteroid that was reported.
The size of a pyramid.
The size of a pyramid. They had an exact date that it would hit Earth if it were to hit Earth. And that was in, I think, July of 2022, or May of 2022. Although that would make a big difference, if you're worrying about it. And they said it's like a 1%, a little under a 1% chance of it happening, but that's a big astronomical number. What do you know about that, and how can I build a shelter?
All right, so a pyramid-sized asteroid will probably just sort of devastate an area maybe like the size of Illinois. So you're pretty...
Oh. No problem.
Why is it Illinois?
Well said, Giza. Well said.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll be some other state that gets that.
Yes. Yeah, I can think of a few.
But that 1% chance is sort of 1% now. As scientists, astronomers keep measuring the orbit of that object, the probabilities are going to firm up. And more than likely, it's going to firm up to zero chance of hitting. I wouldn't worry about that in shelter yet.
With this meter is, how long will we have before Like, when they're like, okay, the 1% chance is actually happening, how long will we have to prepare for this thing? Like, when do we have to call Bruce Willis and go Armageddon situation? Yeah. Like, will we have a stretch to where we'd be like, okay, let's, like, shoot a nuke at this thing or something?
Well, we'll give you about 15 minutes warning.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, no. Plenty of time.
Notice how calm this sounds.
Yes. So we'll know for something like this, we'll have at least a year's warning.
Oh, okay.
So actually, there's coming online in about 2 years is the LFST. It's a new telescope that's being built that's going to basically map out pretty much all of these asteroids that might hit us. And get those orbits exactly. So we're on it.
I love this.
In a couple of years, you won't have to worry about this anymore.
Oh, great.
Or we'll have to completely worry about it. It'll be one or the other. There's no in between there, Gusev. Nothing. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Oh, there's some new Chicago's Night Sky, right? You got a new permanent exhibit at the Adler?
We do. So if you're interested in looking up at the night sky like these meteors, you should come down to the Adler. And we've got a whole new exhibit talking about what you can see in the night sky and light pollution and constellations, and it's a lot of fun.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. Yeah. Gisa Cook, who's Director of Astronomy at Adler Planetarium. We only get the best here. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right. I will admit that I am not fully heartened by what I heard there. You know, there's
1% is significant when we're talking about meteors potentially wiping out an entire state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, only devastated an area the size of Illinois.
Only.
Illinois. Right. Although, now which side of Illinois? The upstate, downstate? Which way do you go there?
Can you aim for like out there in Illinois?
Yeah, if you had a choice, right. You just kind of.
There's a lot of people up here in Chicago.
Sort of aim it a little bit. But the other problem, though, is if it hits in certain parts of the ocean, it will cause tsunamis.
Oh, yeah, that would be devastating.
Yeah, you see, now you get all kinds of other problems. So I think we got to get Bruce Willis. Get somebody to get Bruce Willis on the blower.
Get Bruce
for me.
On the phone.
Yeah. Let's just have it directed towards Antarctica. There's not really a lot of people over there.
Oh, I think that's bad too.
Well,
for the polar bears.
Yeah. Well, there's the
war
penguins.
On polar bears and penguins.
It's a penguin problem.
Okay. I don't want to lose them either. But if you're going to sacrifice a large population of people or polar bears,
we're already killing polar bears with our global warming situation.
Yes. Right. So. Haven't you seen them? They're on ice floes
by themselves.
Right. And they're like, how am I going to get off?
No amenities. But
they're like, how am I going to get off this thing?
Actually, they're drowning. It's sad.
Well, they can swim though.
Yeah, but the ice is melting so much that they get caught in big areas of water and they can't find ice to climb back up to.
And now you want to shoot a meteor at them. Come on, Lauren. Jeez.
I'm thinking of the best possible
polar bears
horrible option.
That was not a best possible anything that you just said right there.
There's some states that I would
okay, what would
have.
Be the best option?
I
he's yeah. gonna be Mississippi or something.
I was gonna say well there's let's see, let me think. I gotta think about New Mexico, there's not a lot going on there.
Like well in the desert where Area 51 is, that's why there's like a lot of stuff's out there.
Yeah.
You got a lot of just dirt and desert and nothingness.
I'd say. Well, if you're gonna do it, Antarctica, because now you're gonna kill the polar bears, gonna kill the penguins and the puffins, and that's gonna
puffins.
It's gonna make everybody very upset. But that possibly could happen. Here come the hawks, the lightning. There you go. And stepping to our broadcast position here in the concourse at the United Center across from the 110-111 gate next to Legacy Burger, actually at the Goose Island Tap, is Rocky Wirtz right here.
Well, thank you, Ro, for having me.
By the way, the broadcast from the United Center is being brought to you by Citgo. Fill up at your locally owned station today. I noticed pulling into the lot today, Rocky, there's a change in how people can get to the game.
Yes, there is. We partnered with Uber, and they have their own lot. And we have a nice little waiting area that we're going to would be good in the winter when it's lousy out, and in summer when it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And we started that when we had the Laver Cup here to try it out. And you get it much like what you do at an airport. You get a code, and it tells you which lane to go into. And you pick up your...
And your Uber is...
Uber's there waiting for you.
Wow. And do you, like, how often, like, as the game's letting out tonight, let's say, you just like right as you're walking out, you just hit up on the Uber and it should be all right?
Sure.
It's like a cab stand, the way a cab stand is.
Exactly right. Yeah. At least you know. And then that it was where the Uber pickup lot was before, was a few blocks away, and it was, and now it's getting dark early and stuff. People they feel a lot more comfortable when they can see the lot that they actually walk.
This is like less than a block. It's the E block, the E lot, which is just east of the. It's east
like wooden,
across.
It's kitty corner to. It's across the street from the Advocate Center where the Bulls practice.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that's a very. Thank you. The man knows his lot. So that's very interesting. Is that a lease with Uber? How does that work? It's the business association with that.
Well, we had a partnership with them, and we own the land underneath it. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing a lot of people here to work. So I think it's terrific, and we're happy to partner with Uber, and I think it's good for them, and it's certainly good for us.
Wow. So to just make it easier to get in and out of the United Center, if you decide you're going to Uber, as my friends call it.
Exactly. And anything we can do to enhance the fans' experience, if it's the scoreboard, the sound system, or just make it more pleasant to get in and out of here, we try to do it.
All right. Let's talk about the team, because it does appear that they've made this turn. We've been sitting around talking about this all season, Rocky, and we thought, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? It looks like it's happened.
It's like waiting for Godot. It finally shows up. No, I think that they kind of changed its style. It's a lot faster. It's a fun game to watch. And obviously they lost the other night, but I think they're going to do just fine.
Yeah. And the young players are so exciting to watch already.
Well, you look at Kirby Dach, who's 18, is number 77, and I don't think he can shave yet.
No.
And he's been nothing but impressive.
Yeah.
And the goaltending situation, Rocky, maybe the best 1-2 punch in the NHL.
I think so. I mean, we talked about that at the end of the summer. And how the coach has been able to rotate back and forth. Whoever's in the net, you're going to have a really good goaltending performance, and that's the key thing.
Yeah. And the defense. And then finally, the defense has turned around. And the whole idea here, and I think a lot of it has to do with our personal Blackhawk, Connor Murphy. As long as he's playing, it seems like it's okay. I tried to give him credit for it yesterday. He demurred from that because I think he didn't want to get pantsed. But he does seem to – he's making a difference. As you mentioned, Kirby Dach. It's funny. Kirby Dach reminds me. At 77, he reminds me of what I was looking at 12 years ago, 13 years ago with 88. Right?
Well,
he's very similar.
When Patrick Kane talks highly about a young person, that says a lot. So, I mean, if you and I look at someone, it's one thing. But when you're that great a player and you're talking positive things about an 18-year-old, you certainly have to stop and listen.
Yeah.
Well, and his size, there's a lot of potential for him to be more of a Hossa eventually down the line, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think he'll put 20 pounds of muscle on. I mean, he's 200 pounds now. But you can't teach skill, and you can't teach soft hands, and that he has both of those.
They're celebrating the 10-year anniversary all season long of that first Stanley Cup back in 2010. Brian Campbell will be honored with one more shift tonight. I can't believe it's already been 10 years, but what a season it was. What, obviously winning the Cup, but that whole season, I mean, it just had to have been incredible for you.
Well, I think it was, you started shrinking the gap. You had to get by Detroit. But I think that we talked about Marian Hossa earlier. I don't think we would have won one, more or less three cups without Marian Hossa. I think he was the final piece of the puzzle that really put the Hawks over the top.
Absolutely. He made such a difference. And I was so angry at first because I was following the Penguins for a while back then. While Blackhawks will always be my number one team, but I was watching them. And I was upset when Hossa left them to go to the Red Wings because obviously... You
Detroit
left the Penguins,
sucks.
And
we know
Detroit
that,
sucks.
Yes, we know about
so
that.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be trying to accept the new baby into the house. And I was so wrong, and I have admitted that ever since.
Well, it just showed that he saw the young talent the Hawks had at the time. And obviously being in both Pittsburgh and in Detroit, he wanted to win the Cup very badly. And it showed what he did on the ice, but also showed in the locker room what kind of leadership he did.
Oh, my God. Just amazing. And, he's one of just a fan favorite, I mean, it's very hard to have non-fan favorites from those teams because they won so many cups. But Hossa is one of the, a half dozen that were on all three of those teams, right?
That's right.
And there was something else too that I think about that era. I always talk about this when I brag on you, that when you took over the team a couple seasons prior to that, you stood out in this concourse. every night, and you met the fans who were just sort of coming back, and Kane and Taze had gotten drafted, and you're like, hey, we're investing in you. You put the games back on television. You had this moment where you wanted to reconnect with the fans. And to have – and that 2009-2010 team was, you know, one of those just magical moments, because you're going to remember 2 seasons ago they didn't make the playoffs, right?
Well, exactly, and now, we couldn't have done that with the players signing on, too. I mean, they had to want to win this thing, and you wanted to be able. And you know, we had so many young players. Obviously, Kane and Taze were young. But, you know, they had never been there. They had never been in the spotlight like that before. You know, a couple years before, any of those players could have walked down the street anywhere on Michigan Avenue. No one would know who they were.
Right.
And so we were blessed to have the fans give us a second chance, come back. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, everyone that came in here, you know, you thank, because they could be doing a lot of other stuff except coming to the United Center. So,
and it was easy because there was only 12 of them here when you took over, so it was good.
Well, you could pick a seat. Any seat.
It's a really important thing. I mean, you know, and think of all the changes. Think about the great – what you know, winning creates outcomes for everybody. It's changed this stadium completely. It's changed the economics of the stadium, and you have this incredible fan experience when you come in here. And you know, you go around the league and you see teams that have struggled here and in Canada, you know, for years and years and years. And as passionate as their fans may be, you can't get the same experience.
No, I mean, the Chicago fans, you know, we talked about it 1,000 times. They're terrific. Fans are terrific, you know, they support the team. But it also, when the Hawks win, it makes the whole city feel good.
Yeah.
And it just has an uplifting feeling, and everyone wants to be a winner. Obviously, there's nothing like winning, but you know they're there, and we're lucky enough to have over 500 consecutive sellouts. We led the league in attendance again, and that's because of these great fans.
Tonight, the Hawks are taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning in the 5 millionth consecutive sellout here at the United Center. And Rocky Wirtz, who played a little bit of a piece of that, is here. We were just talking a little bit off the air. This is the first time in how many years?
Well, since 1975, so it's what, 44?
Since 1975, that the Blackhawks will be playing over Thanksgiving weekend at home.
So we had that Black Friday game. I think it's 3:00 in the afternoon.
Wow.
Oh, that's the perfect timing for that day. That is the best. I love afternoon
games.
So
it's a hot ticket. So if anyone wants a ticket, buy it now.
Because it's interesting because, you know, the circus used to pull in here for that Thanksgiving week, and both the Bulls and the Hawks would then have to go on the West Coast.
That's right.
And spend a couple of weeks out there as they waited to get back into the house. And then they would come back and it would smell like elephant in here.
It took a while to get that tiger, you know what, away.
Right, it's true.
It bended the blacktop out in the parking lot.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you, it was a funny thing. Especially the old Chicago Stadium didn't have the same ventilation. I think when you guys were building this 25 years ago, I think you probably understood the need for anti-cat pee ventilation in this place.
Absolutely. You know, it would stick around a long time.
Right, until about February, I found. You know, until like the All-Star break.
And then they bring their own popcorn that I think they had probably, you know, brewed 2 months beforehand. So between stale popcorn and tiger, you know what.
Now, that's interesting. I was wondering about that, because their popcorn always did suck.
It was so terrible. And then cotton candy would stick to your hands.
And it was theirs. They weren't using your concession.
No, they'd bring their own. We had sold the hot dogs, and then they would always have something that had a battery that would last until you got into the parking lot in your car.
Right, the light. and you yelled and screamed about getting that.
And your child would cry because it wasn't working when they got in the car. And then they, you know, the mom or dad all had to try to settle them down. So you almost had to bring your own batteries.
They would sell these little cap guns. Because the lion tamers would have a gun, you know, like a cat pistol in their hand to get the attention.
That seems like a good idea.
Yes.
An entire arena of kids.
Honest to God.
But I mean, live animals.
It was a different era.
Yeah,
I don't think you understand that, Kevin.
I'm sensing that.
Yeah. They at least didn't sell the full bullwhip.
Kevin's not that old.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But it was a different thing, man. That's something. Because now, especially this weekend, these couple of weekends, people come downtown. They do all kinds of stuff, and it's a great idea if you're going to go out shopping, right?
Yeah.
You go shopping, come see the game, then go have a nice dinner downtown.
Well, and we, you know, I had the Blackhawks store. We have some specials going on that, Black Friday, which are going to be exciting, and those things More about that later. But the people can go down that store and find things they can't find anywhere else in the country.
Can you give me a hint on these Black Friday deals? Maybe off the air, Rocky. Oh, I got to start my Christmas shopping.
They're going to be great. No, it's going to be. It's going to be.
Rocky's personally in there with a pricing gun. He's in there slashing prices.
Slashing.
And if they start selling out too quickly, we just keep raising prices.
Exactly.
The business, man.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you the jersey to look out for is 77 right now.
Yeah, Doc.
That one's going to change everybody.
Yeah, I mean they'll know who he is. I'll tell you that.
Is Queenie's going to be open for dinner that night?
I'm not sure.
Black Friday. Can we find that out?
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm not sure.
Can we find that out? If Queenie's is open?
Yeah, they'll be open.
Yeah. We never after the game.
Yeah.
After the game.
Yeah, we never pass up an opportunity to take someone's money.
It's so good there. Ro and I ate there the other night, and it's just...
Oh, my God.
I was just there the other night. It was really good.
Yeah. It's a fine dining experience here at the stadium. Anybody can go to it. You don't have to have a ticket for the game. You can go during the game night. And after the game starts, you know, there's immediate seating in there, and it's amazing. It's amazing.
And you can watch the game in there.
Yeah, exactly, on the TVs. And then also you get the sense that you're in the stadium, and you kind of are, but then you're kind of not all at the same time. It's a magic trick. It's another magic trick from Rocky Wirtz. All right, well, you bring your pricing gun, and you bring fresh popcorn, which is nice because we do see the popcorn being made here, and that is it's absolutely fresh, which, you know, makes a big difference. And what are you looking for as we head toward the after the holidays? Obviously, Jeremy Colleton, I think a lot of pressure is off of him right now, right?
Because just think a year ago, you know, where we were with him and he, you know, getting his, you know, where he is now, and then his coaching staff and the players and getting to understand his system. So I think it just settled everything down.
You know, we heard that Brent Seabrook is housing Kirby Dach right now. They're building a little bit. I don't know if you heard that, Rocky, but yeah. I think it goes to show you how much this core of Seabrook, Kane, Taves are doing what they're doing to help some of the younger guys.
And I think, you know, Nylander, you know, actually lives with you know, the goalie.
That's right. Leonard. Yeah. Leonard.
He shared a very funny video the other day of kids just climbing all over his back.
And don't forget when, you know, Patrick Kane came in, he lived at Stan Bowman the first year with his family.
Oh, that must have been something.
In his basement. And the kids were younger then. And I think he did the same thing.
Any of the players live with you, Rocky?
I think my wife, Marilyn, probably liked that.
Oh, easy, Rocky. Oh, my God. She's probably listening to this right now. So, well, the dogs, I mean, Rocky's always had the dogs. That's the one
thing. They can watch your dogs while you go out for sick. Patrick Kane, you're going to watch my dogs.
They tell me everything. So those dogs watch my wife like a hawk. And they tell me when I come home exactly what she did all day.
They know. They have that look on their face, right?
Like, I know. I talk to them all the time.
Got a full report.
Well, it is an honor to have you here, as always. And thank you for these, you know, many, many, many years of great entertainment. And you definitely feel like this team is certainly playoff caliber, and we'll just see how deep they can get.
So. Well, as we find out, you know, all you have to do is get in, and then anything can happen.
Right. Right. And we were talking about, Kevin likes to trot this little thing out, Rocky, that this year, or last year at this time, the St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup champions were basement dwellers, right? Had the worst record in hockey, did they not?
And I think up until the first of the year.
And the team the Hawks are playing tonight, the Lightning, had the most points all of last year, and they were bounced in the first round. So to your point, it could go either way.
That President's Cup is, you know, the team that gets the most points during the regular season. That can be the kiss of death.
It's almost a curse at this point, right? It seems like teams that have won it lately are getting bounced in the first or second round.
Well, you go back and look at the record, and those teams do not do well many, many times.
Yeah. All right. Rocky Wirtz, chairman of the Chicago Blackhawks, and that Breakthrough Beverage, that thing seems to be doing okay, too.
Yeah, we're plugging away.
Yeah. That's it. If you're for all of your alcohol needs, these
I
are the guys
many.
For you. Yes, I know. I know we all
go
do.
Visit your fellow, your nice watering hall, and yes. And or your corner liquor store, and it helps us out a lot.
Yes, it does. That's exactly right, Rocky. Thanks so much for being with us. It's the top five on the Rokan Show. Five, let's go.
Three, two, one. Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Here we go. Checking in at
number five.
So there was some stuff in the Washington, the D, and the C today. I got to tell you.
Weird.
It was very interesting. Up on Capitol Hill, the impeachment inquiry continued, and David Holmes was on the stand, one of two people on the stand. It got weird here. He is the counselor for political affairs of the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine. And during his closed-door deposition last week, he said that the conversation between Trump and Sondland happened while he was ambassador to the European – well, Sondland was ambassador to the European Union, you know. And they were – this is the guy that overheard the phone – part of the phone call here. And, here you go.
Well, Ambassador Sondland's phone was not on speakerphone. I could hear the president's voice through the earpiece of the phone. The president's voice was loud and recognizable. And Ambassador Sondland held the phone away from his ear for a period of time, presumably because of the loud volume. I heard Ambassador Sondland greet the president and explain he was calling from Kyiv. I heard President Trump then clarify that Ambassador Sondland was in Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland replied, yes, he was in Ukraine, and went on to state that President Zelensky, quote, loves your ass. I then heard President Trump ask, so he's going to do the investigation. Ambassador Sondland replied that he's going to do it, adding that President Zelensky will do anything you ask him to do. Even though I did not take notes of these statements, I have a clear recollection that these statements were made. I believe that my colleagues who were sitting at the table also knew that Ambassador Sondland was speaking with the president.
Okay.
I always do that when people talk on the phone very loud. Just like hold it out and you're like, ah.
I thought you meant eavesdrop. I'm like, uh-oh.
No.
I got to watch my phone calls around Lauren in case there's an inquiry involving us somewhere down the road.
You know, the president, I mean, the one thing is all of us get that because he likes to go out in front of the helicopter and yell at us.
Right.
Yeah, no matter what he's saying, he's like, I think it was,
He's always yelling over something.
Yeah.
Very loud.
Then, of course, ASAP Rocky had to be discussed again.
Oh, my God.
The conversation then shifted to Ambassador Sondland's efforts on behalf of the president to assist a rapper who was jailed in Sweden. And I can only hear Ambassador Sondland's side of the conversation. Ambassador Sondland told the president that the rapper was, quote, kind of effed there and should have pled guilty. He recommended that the president, quote, wait until after the sentencing or it will only make it worse. And he added that the president should let him get sentenced, play the racism card, give him a ticker tape when he comes home.
Oh.
Ambassador Sondland further told the president that Sweden, quote, should have released him on your word, but that you can tell the Kardashians you tried.
I love when...
Oh, my God.
I love when reality becomes an episode of Veep. I mean, it really is just a circus, and it's just unbelievable.
Really true.
It's just a bunch of political goofballs.
Right. Oh, we should just play the race card. Like, just tell it, you know, the Swedes, they're probably racist anyway. Just go ahead.
We're going to have
to let the guy go.
Great idea, guys. Play the race card here.
What are you going to do?
It gets played
on us all the time. We'll just play on them. But now listen to this. This is Fiona Hill. Now, she was interesting. She is the latest of the impeachment witnesses to agree that Ambassador Yovanovitch was treated horribly by the president and Mike Pompeo.
I think it was unnecessary. If there was a decision to have a political ambassador put in place in Ukraine, that would be perfectly acceptable. It's exactly the right of the president to be able to do that. I did not see why it was necessary to malign Ambassador Yovanovitch to such an extent.
You like that accent? Pretty good, huh? She's British.
Oh, yeah.
But then she went to Harvard, and she's been working in the State Department for a number of years, and she was taking none of it.
Yeah, I'm not messing around with her.
None of it. I mean, she had the blunt cut haircut. And
right. She had a Band-Aid around one finger, like a villain out of a Quentin Tarantino movie or something. It's like, what is that for? What happened?
Who did you kill with just that injury?
Who did you kill? Right. She got a paper cut from killing somebody.
She said that she got angry when she found out that Gordon Sondland, a U.S. ambassador to the EU, we know who he is, had apparently been put in charge of U.S.-Ukraine relationships by the president because, according to her, Gordon's mission was at odds with hers. Here's an exchange with she and the lawyer for the Republican, Steve Castor.
Did you have any concerns when he presented himself to you as somebody with a major role?
I did at the time in which he presented it to me. This was after Ambassador Yovanovitch had been pushed out of her position. And it was at that juncture that Ambassador Sondland's role seemed to grow larger.
There you go. Now, the interesting thing, there were a couple times where she had to stand up and defend herself. And I'm just going to tell you, Those guys who wanted to buzzsaw her walked into the wrong buzzsaw. Because she
good
does
for
look,
her.
She does look like one of those people that could kill you with her, like she take one
exactly,
eyelash out and then you're done.
Some secret underground training ground where she she learned like every sort of martial arts.
Come here, shirtless Jim Jordan. Let me spin kick you. Something like that. Anyway, it was very entertaining today. I don't know if anything got done, but I could just tell you it was fun to watch.
Number four.
Thank you, Ryan. Miles Garrett told NFL officials that Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph hurled a racial slur at him before he ripped his head off and then started beating him with it.
Why are we just hearing this now?
Because he's in an appeals court right now.
It sounds like he's playing the race card the way that Ambassador Sondland told Donald Trump to do.
It's the same world, right? It's just one sports, one's politics. There's hearings. There's appeals. It's the same stuff, 2019.
Yeah, they're Sweden. Go ahead, play the race card. They'll never know the difference. Rudolph is calling a little bit of BS here. The Cleveland Browns star met with NFL officials to appeal the length of his suspension from the November 14th incident, although they haven't really said how long it is yet.
Well, that's what he's appealing, is because right now they said indefinite. He wants a
hard number.
He wants a hard number.
Yeah.
Definitive suspension.
He wants to know if he's ever going back to work.
Yes.
Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens addressed the situation at practice.
Well, what Miles and I talk about is stay between Miles and I. You know, I'm sure Miles presented himself professionally like he's done ever since the moment it happened afterwards. He's been nothing but professional in his responses. I can't really comment on the arbitrator's decision. We'll respect his decision on whatever he decides. And I'm sure Miles presented himself professionally to the arbitrator in the hearing. And I stand by Miles, and that's not going to waver.
Meanwhile, there are shirts in Cleveland being sold that says Pittsburgh started it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Saw that today.
The indefinite suspension has been upheld, so I don't know when he's going to be back on the playing field.
Well, it was pretty crazy.
It's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
And by the way, there were six players in that scrum.
Yeah, there was a lot of
they'd
dumb
have to
going down.
Call those guys in and say, "Did you hear
exactly
that?"
Right.
Right? And then they go, "Well, I don't recall." There's going to be a lot of... Right. No, it should be a congressional hearing before it's all said and done.
Let's have an inquiry for
I want Fiona Hill back on to testify on this.
Get Fiona Hill to question these two. She'll get
yes,
the damn answers.
Exactly.
For these football players.
You want me to take my helmet off, do you? All right, here we go. Checking in at
number three.
Matt Nagy. Does he still work here?
He's still around, bro.
Yeah, he addressed the media before today's practice at Hallis Hall, and one of the questions asked by reporters was about the kicking situation. Is it normal? This is, you know, basically he's familiar with being questioned about his place kicker because, you know, as we know, Eddie Pinheiro missed his first two attempts at field goals in Los Angeles on Sunday night.
He's, again, you have somebody that cares, that wants to make the kicks. He's competitive, and he wants another opportunity, and he's going to get it. So when you feel that, when you don't make a big deal out of it, is my opinion of it in regards to where we're at right now. He missed two field goals. We're all frustrated. He knows he wants to make those. But now it's going to be a challenge to him. Let's see him come back here and nail it. And like I said, I have ultimate faith that he's going to do that. And now it's just we'll see when he's given a chance.
Sure didn't look like you had faith after the two kicks the other day when you decided, not to let him kick again.
Pinheiro was at Soldier Field yesterday getting some kicks in. Went 21-23, according to special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. It brought me back when I thought, remember the Cody Parkey saga? Obviously, we know how it ended, but remember, everyone's like, "You get to Soldier Field, mister, and you kick there." I don't care how long of a commitment. We had our Skycam 9 over Soldier Field. There were like TV reporters. What a circus the kicker position has become in Chicago.
21-23
yesterday at Soldier Field.
That doesn't make me feel better.
No, but like,
shouldn't he be kicking 100 there? I mean, what is it? What's he doing?
I think they have they all have their certain routines. How many they get in a day? At this point, it's sort of like the Trubisky situation for me. You might as well put him out there either to get better or just to evaluate him. And it's the same you can apply to Pinheiro. I mean, what would the point of moving on from him be at this point? Keep sending him out there. The season's over. It's talent evaluation from here on out.
We don't have a first-round pick.
That's a good point for now.
So frustrating.
Checking in at
number two.
Al Pacino sure knows how to give a good pep talk in a newly released trailer for Amazon's upcoming drama Hunters. Pacino's character explains to a band of misfits why they should join his efforts to take down a group of Nazis. It's set in 1977 New York City. It follows a diverse band of Nazi hunters who have discovered that hundreds of high-ranking Nazi officials had actually moved to New York and were living among them.
There comes a time where we all must choose between the light and the darkness. But when there is great darkness in this world, perhaps the choice is made for us. You know, for eons, people like us have been degraded and exterminated. But no more. Welcome to the hunt.
No.
I wouldn't have guessed that was him.
That sounds like my Uncle Sammy. That's what we did right before Sunday night dinner in my house. That was the kind of speech that would be had, that'd be made. It's like, okay, all right.
The meat's getting cold.
I know.
He's got a cigar in his mouth.
Right, exactly. Can I go? I got to do my homework. Right, he did. He always had a cigar in his mouth, and he had one of those, he had sort of like those beach ball, you know, guts.
Oh,
and
right.
He had the pants that went up over.
On the highway.
Who made those pants that went up and over, and then the belt sort of laid on top?
And they always were resting something on the belt?
Yes.
We've all had an uncle or grandpa. Mm-hmm.
Somehow, that's the way they made the clothing back then. I got to tell you, that's exactly what he sounded like. And it was like the same thing, too. He kept thinking that right down the block, there were Nazis. And there might have been. I don't know. It was the 70s. Who knows? There might have been.
Welcome to the hunt.
Little Rose, wide-eyed staring at his uncle.
Could you pass the mashed potatoes? I know it's sad. But I've got homework to do, and there's a really good movie on ABC tonight. Okay. And finally,
number one.
Many young kids have picked up the phone to dial 911 at least once in their lives just to see what happens. We love these. We get one of these about every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. This happened in Arapahoe County, Colorado. Isaiah, last name being withheld, called 911 to ask him to check out his preschool. The sheriff's office released the call. So while the call was funny, they also want to remind people, especially parents, teach children how and when to dial 911.
Arapahoe 911, what is the address of your emergency?
Maybe we can go to my preschool to check out how good it is. Is it okay if I hang up on you?
No, don't hang up on me. Are your parents home?
My parents are home.
Can I talk to your mom or your dad?
You can talk to my dad.
Okay, get your dad for me. I want to talk to your dad.
Okay. Hello, this is Isaiah's dad.
Oh, Isaiah, I know it's still you.
Isn't the family laughing in the background?
I know, where they're like, hey, kid, we'll go viral here.
Yeah.
Call 911.
I got to tell you something right now. Uncle Sammy would not have been back there making them laughing.
The only time you should call 911 is when there's a Nazi general living in the apartment right below you.
Welcome to the hunt.
Now we're going to hunt him.
I don't think he's a Nazi general. I think that's the janitor of the building.
It's our doorman.
I don't think he was.
You don't understand. That's how they hide now in plain sight.
I'm like, okay, green beans. We can do the green beans. Are you enjoying? Is it meat too tough?
We're never going to get to dessert.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, I wish we had more of little Isaiah. Do we have a little? No, we don't. All right. That was it. Did they arrest Isaiah? I'd like to, you know, all of a sudden, you know, like kicking in the door of the house, pepper spraying everybody.
Or did they actually check out the school? Because that's more alarming than a lot of the, can I get a Happy Meal calls?
That's true. Right. What's going on at the preschool?
Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah. I mean, I would get right on that.
Curious.
Welcome to the hunt, Isaiah.
Isaiah, you're my sort of child. You understand. You must take extreme actions now.
Uncle Sammy, all I want is just, could you hand me the big bottle of Coke right there? I just want to eat dinner and I want to go do my homework.
Welcome to the room.
Okay.
Hans, young man.
Did he? Always, he had a cigar that was never lit.
Kind of chewed on it.
Aunt Eleanor would not let him smoke the cigar in the house. That was the whole point of the thing.
Did he sneak it like in the guest room or something over the window?
He would go. This is all in apartment buildings. He would go down to the street level, and he would stand on the steps, and he would smoke the cigar.
Well, everybody walks in.
Right. The other people are walking in.
Walk through the smoke to get out.
Exactly right. Do you know that they think that there's a Nazi on the 14th floor?
Have you seen the mailman? He's got a funny look to him.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It was really unfortunate because the Boys from Brazil movie came out right after that. And that was about that. That was about going and finding Joseph Mengele. And my uncle thought that Joseph Mengele was working in the garage.
Skeptical of everyone.
Yeah, skeptical of everybody. I think that's who it was. I go, but you're from Pittsburgh, Uncle Sammy. All right. Let's do this. Let's close this thing up, and then we've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. How about that?
The top five at five.
And we got Nick Gismondi is going to be joining us from NBC Sports Chicago in just a few minutes. Also, Brian Campbell, you know, he's a Stanley Cup champion. He is going to be celebrating one more shift tonight. He's going to be showing up in skates here at our broadcast position at the Goose Island Pub. And then Adam Birch is also going to be here, too, another 2010 Stanley Cup champion.
Going to be among legends.
Brian Campbell's going to be on with us, and then about 20 minutes later, he's on the ice. So we're really hoping he shows up in uniform and skates.
Because last time we did this, when we were here for one more shift, it was I think it might have been Tony Esposito, though. I think they needed to have
him. I thought
him.
It was the Hall. Who was it? Now that I think about it.
Well, this was last season, and you were here with us last season. Yeah,
the very end, right?
Yeah, yeah. Was it? No, not because Tony Esposito, it takes him like 4 hours to get into the, you know, like basically every goalie, you know, it takes him a long time. But I don't know what they're doing here. I don't know. We'll find out. I really hope he shows up in uniform, though, because that'll be something coming through the concourse in uniform.
Into the Goose Island Pub.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Trying to get through like all the chairs over here, like, excuse me.
They could just put him on a hand truck and push him through. I would think that might be an idea. Don't forget, you know what's coming up on December 6th? I'll tell you what's coming up on December 6th. Thanks for asking. It is the Rokon Carnarvon Express benefiting the United States Marine Corps Toys for Tots. What we're doing is we're doing a live show and concert at the Tinley Park Convention Center. Come one, come all. This is not a ticketed event. You can come. All you got to do is bring a toy for Toys for Tots. As with the Marines today from the 2nd Battalion, 24th Marines, who are going to be receiving those for us. And there's a couple of active duty Marines that are running the unit there. And they were with me today down at Apple Chevrolet, as a matter of fact. We were taking pictures. The Apple Chevrolet, they already have two truckloads.
Great.
Wow.
Filled. So if people want to stop by Apple Chevy in Tinley Park, 8585 West 159th Street in Tinley Park, stop by there. You can drop off a toy. Still come if you want on Friday the 6th of December. We want everybody to come and have a good time because it's just a gigantic party to celebrate not just the holiday season, but also doing something right, and giving back, which is always a nice thing, and to celebrate these brave men and women who go out and not only risk everything, when they're back here, they want to make sure that people have a Christmas. One of the Marines was telling me today that he was at an event in San Diego where he was stationed at the time, and he handed a toy to a little girl, and a woman came up to him and said, you know, when I was, who's volunteering, she asked to take a picture of that because she said that when she was a kid, she grew up with nothing. Aww. And a Marine in uniform gave her first Christmas present in the 1980s.
Aww.
And changed her life. And it sort of gave her hope in the world. And it's funny, that's exactly what the plan is. You know, that's exactly what this is supposed to do. And you wonder if it really does touch people. But it is, it's the power of giving. It's the power of the unexpected. It's the power of doing something right that people just expect you to live your life and everybody kind of is their own little island. Well, the one thing that, you know, we learn, especially in this holiday season, is that is not true. So you want to take part in that and have a good time. Ides of March are going to be there. Big concert with Ides of March at 5:30 in the afternoon that day at the Tinley Park Convention Center, because our live broadcast only goes from 3 to 5:30. Then there's a Hawks game. And then while we're at the Tinley Park Convention Center, live music.
I'm so excited.
Lots of, this gives you a little block away. The there's going to be a bar. Yes, it's Cash Bar, because we're not allowed to give away liquor. We learned that the hard way.
Well, Carnarvon Wagon will be there, right?
The actual real Carnarvon
really
Wagon will be there.
Just for image.
Yes, yes. Well, yes. Well, you know, like we say. There'll be door prizes from Hilton's of Chicago, winter getaway package, signed memorabilia from the White Sox. Ooh, maybe we can get them to get, we should ask them. And see if we can get...
It's White Sox territory.
Yeah. I see if we can... Oh, but what about the new acquisition?
Yeah.
How about that?
That's massive.
Yes. How about we could maybe get something...
We got some time.
Tickets to see Casey and the Sunshine Band, the Four Winds New Buffalo, and special tickets to the Museum of Science and Industry and Shedd Aquarium as well. All the details are at WGNradio.com/toys. How about that? We got our own URL. Presented by American Sale. Bring the fun home for the holidays, and sponsored by Apple Chevrolet, Architect of Chicagoland, Hilton's of Chicago, Dibs.com, and Sweet Alley's Gluten-Free Bakery. All right. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
I know. Yeah. December is almost here. That's so weird.
Well, I kind of feel better about that. The faster we get through this, if this thing is motoring through, I'm okay with it.
The cold weather?
Yeah. Because we got to do what we got to do to get the hell out of this deal that we're in right now. All right, Nick Gismondi is going to join us. He and his mustache will be stepping up to the broadcast position here.
Yeah, I think that needs a chair for itself right now.
At the Goose Island, he's standing right in front of you. The Goose Island Pub is where we are at in the Chicago in the United Center here in downtown Chicago by,
108, 109.
108, 109. That's what I meant. I kept saying the wrong thing. For months.
Yes.
We're by 108, 109 if you want to come by and say hello. That's where we are. All right. Nick Gismondi is with us, NBC Sports Chicago. And, Nick, it appears that there might have been an incident on your upper lip, and we'd like to talk to you about that, and we'd like to help you. I know there's a way to help you.
I don't know what to do. I woke up on November 1st, and it's just continued to grow. It's gotten darker and wiry, and it's
you're
not
a
very
hairy
itchy
man,
as well.
Kind of my guess.
You know what? I'm not actually. I'm Italian. My dad, first generation American. My dad was born in Rome,
mm-hmm.
And he's got a fantastic mustache. That's impressive. And I think, My goal here was obviously I'm doing the Movember thing with the guys in the room. So
mm-hmm.
quick backstory: I walked into the room. I'm the new guy, and mm-hmm. so Andrew Shaw and DeBrinket and Strom and Ryan Carpenter were like, "Gizmo, you got to do that with us." And I said,
yeah,
"Okay,
pretty
all
much
right.
have to. Yeah,
I'll grow one as well, then, boys." So I had visions of Tom Selleck and Magnum PI.
Yeah.
It's not.
What
it's
happened
not,
to that?
I don't
only,
really.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not really there. It isn't anywhere close.
You
so.
Look like Enzo the Baker, is what you look like from The Godfather. And you know what? But that's the thing. It's so funny. You see these guys who are wearing them now, and you see it. You see a ton of it in hockey, right?
But
you're seeing it in other places. But it's funny. You'll see the guys. Especially some of the younger players doing it on the bench, and you're like, they can't really fully grow them out. You're like, that's like a porn stash, you know? It's like,
yeah.
It's like a weird kind of a wiry, like, you know, it's like when like the kid who could grow a mustache in eighth grade, and you're like, what's wrong with that kid?
Yeah.
It's that look.
Yeah.
But you know what? December 1, man, everybody goes back to normal.
It's close. It's definitely coming off December 1st. I've gotten, people either love it or they hate it. So the responses on social media have been, oh, my God, keep it, or I'm not watching you until you take it off. So
it's pretty incredible how much different you look with the mustache. It's like a completely different person from the last time.
Could be a bank robber.
I think
that's what I like about
him.
It
might not even be Nick Gismondi.
Man, see?
See, that is, actually, that's exactly it. Yeah. We need to get you a fedora.
Yes. And yeah, same. Yeah. No, I appreciate that, Kev. No, it's like two different, totally different people. This is not helping my. This is not helping my.
I love how that's
personal
bravery. You're just starting in Chicago, NBC Sports Chicago, the Blackhawks guy. Like a month into the season, I'm going to grow a big, thick mustache.
Yeah. It sounded better in my mind when I agreed.
The thought of
the
it.
Listen, if Andrew Shaw told you to jump off a bridge, would you do it?
I'd be jumping off the bridge.
That's true. Yes. See, that's the thing. If Andrew Shaw tells you to do something, you're going to do it. Because Andrew Shaw is just crazy enough to. You know, you don't want to ever guess that one day you're going to run into him somewhere, and he may have had a few, and he's got a fork in his hand.
Listen, I'm a team guy, right? I grew up playing hockey, so I come from that hockey background. For me, it's a family. It's funny. I was telling everybody off mic just a little bit ago that I'm a full send guy. I'm an all in guy. So, you know, you work for NBC, you work for the team. It's you buy in hard. If they say jump, I say how.
Yeah, okay.
Does it have its own Twitter page yet?
It doesn't. It probably should, because this thing has taken on a life of its own. Robin Leonard was coming off the ice the other day when I forget what game it was they had won, but Leonard came off the ice, took his glove off, and actually gave it a little tug before he went to the locker room. So the boys like it. I'm good with it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know. How many times have you been taped to a locker in the locker room? That's what I'd like to know. All right. Let's talk about tonight's game, because you've got Hawks very hot. Then they dropped one on Tuesday night, and they're playing a team now that's just lost two in a row, but is hungry.
Yeah, listen, Tampa Bay is a good hockey team. They've been a good hockey team for quite some time. But as I keep beating the drum, this Chicago Blackhawks team is very good as well. And I think what you're doing is you're starting to see that now. At the start of the year, there was that figuring out process. There's a bunch of new guys in the room. There's a new system. There was just a new feeling. And every year, you know, it's not just come out of training camp and, hey, we're ready to go. I mean, ideally, that's what happens. But when you have changeover, that's not always the reality. So what you're seeing now is you're seeing these guys start to come together. They're having fun again, which is a major, major thing.
You feel that. Well, I mean, you're going to have the best seat in the house for that, right? Because you're down there, and you get to see, and you're talking to them, you know, in between periods, and you're talking about the end of the game. There's a lightness to them that there wasn't there early on.
Yeah, and there's a lightness in practice, too, and a morning skate, and they're having fun with one another, and they're chirping one another in the locker room, and those kinds of things tell me everything I need to know. It's okay, all right, they're in a good headspace right now. There's no panic after the loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. They just got off to a slow start. And listen, that Carolina
Hurricanes
team.
Which is the one thing
they
know for sure that they can't do.
Right, you can't. You can't. Not in this league against teams like Carolina that are very speedy, that have offense, that are rolling right now. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Tampa Bay. This is a good team. It's a good offensive hockey team. But they've beaten good offensive hockey teams before. The Golden Knights are essentially playing a lot of the same hockey as the Carolina Hurricanes. So if they would have played the exact same way against Vegas as they did, if they would have played the same way against Carolina as they did against Vegas, they win that hockey game, right? So I love the way they finished that game. That third period was exactly what they needed to do. If they would have played 60 minutes of that against the Carolina Hurricanes, they'd win that game by a ton. So off to a fast start tonight. If they can do that, I think they're in real good shape.
And Kirby Doc impressing just about everybody so far, his teammates, his coaches, and the fans, I think, winning them over as well. Scrappy-type players so far on the third or fourth line, and I think fans are really going to like this guy for a long time.
Well, listen, this is the core of the team moving forward, right? He's going to be the future of the organization. So as well as he's playing and as good as he's doing, that's what you want to see. And I think the most impressive thing about him is that he's not afraid to go to the dirty areas.
Right.
You know, he's the most hit guy 5-on-5 in the NHL right now. He takes about 16-plus hits a game. But he makes plays when he's taking those hits. He doesn't shy away from it. So he's always making a move. He's always getting a stick on it. He's always taking the hit and making the right play. So he's never doing anything under duress or panic. And the best part about him is that he's super coachable. You've got an 18-year-old superstar who was drafted third overall this summer, and he's completely coachable. They want him to do faceoffs a different way? No problem. He does it. They want him to move the puck a little bit differently through transition? Great. He does it. Hey, Kirby, this shift, skate the puck more. Okay. He does it. So to have a guy like that that's so moldable.
And to do all that when you're 18, you're going to win everybody over.
Well, he was 5 years old when Cam Taves got drafted. I just don't want to stop and think about that
it's
for
incredible.
A second, right?
Yeah.
And so now, all of a sudden, here you go. You got a guy who is, you know, basically grown up, obviously, around hockey his whole life. You don't get to be in the NHL when you're 18 unless you were a superstar when you were 5, right? It's funny. We were just watching, and I'm sure you see this when you come in here early, the kids playing on the ice here. They have this. They have the Junior Chicago Blackhawks or whatever they call them.
Yep.
That organization's amazing. And so these are like 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds, and there's always one kid. who's better than everybody,
yep.
right? Like head and yep. shoulders. And it's and I saw that one kid, he always had the puck. Yep. He was always skating around people. And you're like, you know, that kid's at least going to play in college.
Well, right? And there's a live and breathe and die by it mentality, right? Like you can go play hockey casually and have a lot of fun doing it. But if the kids that are shooting the puck when they get home and they're watching every single video of their favorite player on YouTube and they're glued to their favorite team's game, so you... you got to be skilled, but you also got to have, there's an immense passion. I mean, I've been a part of this game since I was about 5 years old, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And, you know, I owe it, whether you play in the NHL or you broadcast in it or you write about it or you coach in the league or you're a trainer, anybody that falls in love with the game of hockey wants to be in the NHL at some level. So
right.
even if you don't make it out there, even if you're not a Kirby Dock or a Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews, you still can make it to the NHL, and it's just about finding that dream, following that passion.
I do think the Blackhawks helped a lot in terms of gain hockey fans, even if you're not from Chicago. But especially with that 2010, you know, 2013, 2015, kind of that whole run, people really started getting into hockey. They're like, wow, okay, what is this? This is our really good team in Chicago, if you're a Chicagoan. And then other people were just like, this is a very exciting organization to watch.
Well, I think when John McDonough sort of came in and the changeover in the ownership, I think you see what is extremely exciting and the job that Jay Blunk has done, and then Al McIsaac on the hockey side. You've created this unbelievable product. I mean, it's a first-class organization, guys, and it's an honor to be a part of it.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you, Gizmo, because you're a lot of fun, and you're a good sport for growing that mustache. That's all I'm going to say.
It's not, don't get too used to it. It's coming off very,
yeah. No.
Very soon.
You know what? I'm going to be happy not to be too used to it. I just want to say that when we see you here in December, we don't have to worry about any of these things.
Okay, good.
All right, very good.
Thanks,
all right, you
guys.
Can see Nick Gizmondi on NBC Sports Chicago. He's the Blackhawks ringside reporter, and he's on all over the place. Thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. And look who just stepped up to the podium with us here. Yes, it is Brian Campbell, Soupy as he is known. And you're going to be skating one more shift today. Tonight.
Correct. Yes.
Now, we were very much anticipating because the game, we are, well, we're a little bit over an hour away from puck drop, hour and 20 minutes away from puck drop. We were really kind of hoping that you were going to show up in full pads. Full deal.
Wow. I could have, but...
Why didn't you... I mean, I know it's radio, but I like the visual of it. With you on the skates, like, walking through, you know, doing the turtle walk, and I love that.
Yeah, it should be, like, one more shift and one more lap around the concourse here, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
Add that into it. So, I do plan on watching the game in my equipment tonight, so...
On the bench? Do you get to do that?
No, I'm going to be up in the seats, so... I'll watch tonight with my equipment on. You never know; those pucks come flying anywhere. You got to be prepared.
That's true. Well, didn't we use a janitor last season in goal when we lost? Didn't we have? So, I mean, that can happen, right?
Yeah. The accountant.
You're available if needed, is what you're saying.
Always available.
All right. So, let's talk a little. What are you seeing the change here? Because it does seem like something's happening.
Yeah, I think. For sure. I think defensively they've been better. I think they're maybe have tweaked. I had a few tweaks there. They're getting great goaltending by both guys. I think that's anytime you can get that, especially on back-to-backs. You could even see it when we played Toronto back-to-back. We're going into the game with a number one goaltender where they're going in with, you know, a backup, and then the next day he got sent down. So it's like, We're coming in with number one every night playing. So I think that's a big thing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what is it, 938? Kev, what are the numbers there? You had them. The save percentages?
Save percentage. I got a 934 for Leonard. That's third best in the league. And Crawford's at 914. So.
Yeah, and Crawford's played really good the last bunch of games. And I see that. And then obviously the forwards, we're scoring some goals now, and the power play is starting to pop. But I'll tell you one thing, Duncan Keith is playing phenomenal hockey now.
Yeah.
Really good hockey. And, you know, he's carrying that back end a lot of nights. He's logging the minutes. It's like he just keeps going, and I think he doesn't get...
Marian Hossa-esque.
Yeah,
sort of
he doesn't get enough credit. And... you know, I think he's been huge for the hockey club.
Yeah.
You're still player development coach is your title now with the Blackhawks organization. The player we've kind of brought up a few times today, Kirby Dach, only 18 years old, but he seems to be fitting in just fine and learning quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've spent a lot of time in Rockford with the prospects, and Kirby was down there for obviously a short stint. So just seeing him and you know, you can see little things on the ice. And I think that's the biggest thing that you notice, and I notice with prospects now, is like there's little things on the ice that they do that you're like, oh, wow, you know, he's going to be good. And he's showing it now at the NHL level. You're like, I still sit there and I'm like, oh, wow. So,
give me an example of that.
Well, the other night, I don't even know what game it was. He was coming up the middle of the ice, I think, and he literally toe drag kind of pulled it in and went around a guy. And 18-year-old kids don't do that or don't have that awareness and on the ice. And the other thing I like about him too is you watch his game, and yeah, he can make the plays and skate and get around the ice, but he goes to the front of the net, and he's going to find goals that way, and he knows where to go and the spots to head to. Even when he was trying to get his hat trick the other night, he was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to give it to that 88 guy, and I'm going to go to the net.
Right.
Because I know that 88's going to try to find me. And, you know, he gets it. Where some guys may be hanging out, you know, at the top of the circle on the far end, he gets it.
He's
so
very aware of where he is, and everybody is on the ice, can see plays developing. Yeah. And like you said, it just being 18, it is very impressive to see something like that. But he's also just going to get bigger in terms of size. And he's already very talented with stick handling. What do you think is going to happen in 10 years?
Yeah, I think you look in 2 years how he's going to get stronger and more confidence. I think his hockey IQ is, you know, it's I don't ever want to compare anybody to Patrick's Kane's IQ, but he's got some pretty good IQ out there. And I remember seeing a picture of his dad on they interviewed him for his first game, and his dad, you know, you could see the size that he's going to fill into and how much stronger he's going to be with the
how tall is he now? He's not going to get taller necessarily. 6'3", 6'4". Yeah, something like that. So in skates, he's 6'8", right? I mean, that's
Well, we had him in studio the day, like, days after he was drafted. He looks like he's 15 years old right now, but he's got the big frame. So, you've got to figure when he does get a little older, he's going to be a big guy on the ice.
Yeah, it's the strength that he's going to have and holding off guys. So, nice thing is he's playing some wing. He can play center, obviously. So, you know, he's just an all-around special talent so far.
You got a player comp? Who would you compare him to around the NHL or even with the Hawks? Style of play, size,
etc.? You hear a Kopitar a little bit. Getzlaff, you hear that too. But, I don't know. You know, hopefully he's his own vision of his own person. Yeah, in 5 years, sure. We're like, you know, we're going to compare everybody to him, and you're like, oh, wow, this guy's the best of the best.
He moves so well at his size. You know, you wonder if he puts on another 20 or 30 pounds of muscle. I mean, have you seen guys, does that slow them down?
Hockey players don't need to put on. Guys are so trying to get wiry now and be able to move out there. He's definitely going to put on weight. But it's not like the 20, 30 pounds. I could see another 10, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, 15. But it's, you know, you look at the game now and the workouts guys are doing, it's all about being flexible, being able to move out there.
But he's taking hits, too. I mean, he's not afraid to be physical.
Yeah, I think he's going to have better awareness on the ice eventually, too, and learn that. Cause look at it, he went from juniors to this. It's a world of difference. So, you know, it's been pretty special so far. He surprised me for sure.
Brian, hold on one second. We're talking to Brian Campbell. Soupy, he's going to be celebrating one more shift tonight. He's on the ice doing that thing. It's just like a slap shot. He's going to take off all his clothes. Today's broadcast, United Center before the Blackhawks take on Tampa. Sponsored by Geico. 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. Brian Campbell is with us at the Goose Island Pub. I always have to look at the wall to see where I am, which is a good thing to do.
I was always in a bar, so sometimes he like, opens his eyes like, where am I?
Soupy, I don't know if you know this, but when you're in a bar, sometimes they all start to look the same.
That is true.
Yeah, that can happen. Well, let's talk about the 2010 team, because you're going to skate one more shift tonight. Talk a little bit about what that was, because, you know, it was one of the longer droughts in professional sports, right, between championships of existing champions, because it had been, you know, the 1960s to 2010. What did that mean for you to be a member of that team?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of hard to put it into words. I think it was the how close we were as a group. I think, you know, nobody in that locker room had won a championship before, so it was kind of you going through this for the first time with everybody. And obviously the excitement of starting to roll through the playoffs was, you know, by, you know, going through your opponents slowly. And obviously the first, when we played Nashville, that might have been the hardest series for us. Out of all of them.
The Duncan Keith moment.
Yeah, there's many moments. That was San Jose series. For me, you know, I played in San Jose, so beating them four straight was like, you know, like going in there, okay, we're playing the team that I was on a couple years ago in the conference finals for a little bit, and And it was like, I wanted that series so bad. I would have done anything to win that series. And I think that's what we had on our hockey club. It didn't matter. Anybody would do anything or sacrifice their body to win games and for the betterment of the team. So, it was just a really special moment for Chicago and obviously for the Blackhawks and the players.
Is it crazy to think it's been 10 years?
Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem that long ago. It is a little weird when you say that. I think for everybody, because I honestly feel like it's a place where everybody in Chicago is like, I know where I was that night, kind of thing.
And
then you're like 10 years ago. It's like, wow, okay. Yeah. So it's definitely.
I know, time flies.
Yes.
Time definitely flies.
Well, that team, too, like for my generation, there was, we always talk about this, how John McDonough and Rocky brought like hockey basically back to Chicago. My generation is a 30. Like, we had a window there where half the games weren't on TV. Yeah. So, like, in some ways, that team, because like that season was so fun. There were people who maybe liked hockey a little bit, but it was maybe not all that exposed to the Blackhawks. And it just, you guys, the city fell in love with you guys, and it just kind of brought hockey back.
There was characters on that team, too.
That's exactly
what I think fans really love, too, is like, you know, we weren't the most mature, and I was the only one. We weren't the most mature ones out there. So I think, you know, the characters and the different personalities, you know, I think, you know, obviously everybody loves Keenan Taves, but I think there's so many players on that team where my favorite player was this person or this person. So I think with that obviously brought, you know, the fans even closer together. So, you know, and to do that for the Wirtz family, I think is, for Rocky, you know, that's all you can ask for. Every time I went to work, I'm like, you know what, I want to make my owner proud, and I think, you know, for the organization, it was special.
You got any good stories from that season that you could tell on the air?
Wow.
Considering the characters on that roster?
No, I know. There's so many different
I don't want to get you in trouble here, but, you know, I'm sure you guys have plenty of great memories.
Yeah, I think we're just all, you know, they kind of blend in a little bit, but they're all, you know, just how, you know, even our celebration when we get into piles after a goal is just everybody's, you know, saying different things and just trying to be funny but having a good time. Or it was like, you know, we always had a thing in the locker room. It was like, okay, we need big celebrations tonight after goals. Like, that was a big thing in our locker room. It was like, who's going to have the biggest celly tonight when they score a goal? So it was like, you know, that's what we kind of bonded and lifted everybody up and had fun with it, and hopefully not too much pressure put on the guys.
So you're leaving Philadelphia. And the stories are legendary of fans, and even Rocky tells a great story about worrying he was going to get killed leaving the stadium in Philadelphia because those fans, I don't know if you know this, they're a little emotional in Philadelphia about their teams. Yeah. So, and especially the way that it happened where no one saw the goal right when it occurred. And it couldn't have been a better, you know, more fitting thing with Patrick Kane scoring that goal. But you got the Stanley Cup, and you're on the airplane, and you're heading back to O'Hare. What's the weirdest thing that you saw happen to that Stanley Cup on that plane?
I don't think there's anything. It's just, it was definitely, had a seatbelt on. I think that's a for sure thing. But, you know, on the plane, it was just, you know.
Can you believe it, that you were flying with the Stanley Cup?
No, you don't believe it. You look back, you're like, is that what I think it is back there? And I think, you know.
God, like, what a moment, right?
Definitely have to get down on your knees to drink out of the cup when you're on a plane, so that's for sure.
Turbulence.
Yes.
I would love to get the exact number amount of adult pops that were consumed on that flight home from Philly.
As I seem to recall, that was a 49.5-hour bender that these guys were on until the end of the
I was not feeling too good the day of the parade. That's my only regret. It's like, I was definitely dehydrated for that one.
There were helicopter shots. I will never forget this. Following these guys, like they were on, you know, like a tour bus kind of a thing, right? And with the cup, and they'd pull up, and everybody had their own dive bar that they wanted to go to, and it would be like, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're pulling up at this one bar, and then there's a helicopter over it, and then you're moving on to the next thing. And the rumors were, everybody's like, oh, they're coming here next, they're coming here next, they're coming here next. And it, with all of the things, whether it was the World Series, even the Cubs World Series, they didn't have this kind of a response to that, because it's like you said, it's such a working class sport in the way that people connect in a really emotional way, because they understand that if you understand the sport, you love it, right?
Well, that's the biggest thing about the Stanley Cup, is you bring it out and it's like, okay, if you want to, you know,
touch it,
it's like it's there, and it's you know, I think to be a part of it, and I think, you know, we wanted to give so much back to Chicago and celebrate that way and just never let that go again. Yeah. So, you know, it's, I think they obviously winning two more cups after that, they got better and better at the celebration and moving around Chicago a little bit.
And fans got better at finding out where the cup is. Yeah, social media, there was like Twitter accounts like the Stanley Cup Watch. Where
even then,
it?
I don't think Twitter, was Twitter around? I don't think in 2010.
It might have been, but not as
but
big as
it was very
as
basic,
is.
So it was right. Like, so that was even the better thing. It was like, there's not as many cameras out there and everything, so it's just...
I know, yeah. Right, exactly right. So today, it's a little different. All right, Brian Campbell, get out there, because you got to get your gear on. One more shift, you're going to be out on the ice, and let's bring home a goal now tonight, would
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I know. Hopefully we can get a big win here for the Hawks tonight and keep rolling here, so it's good to see.
All right.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. There's Brian Campbell. If you come to the game tonight, celebrating one more shift, you're going to see him before the national anthem, and he's going to come out, do a little skating around, and then he said he's going to wear his uniform the entire night. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch as he moves his way through the stadium. That's going to be fun. All right. We've got coming up, Adam Burrish is going to join us, also a member of that team. We'll see if he's more honest about what somebody did in the cup and the plane on the way back. But, you know, that's
that was such a wild year. I'm telling you, man. Just that whole season was so fun.
Well, that whole summer.
Right.
Best.
It was a summer-long celebration. Mm-hmm.
It was.
The Blackhawks.
And, you know, that's the other piece of it, is that it's the only spot other than the Bulls. But, you know, the Bulls celebrations, they won. They had they did that. It wasn't a parade. It was like a rally.
Mm-hmm. At Grant Park every time.
Right. And, you know, Michael would drive his Corvette, like, up onto the stage, get out, smoke a cigar, hoist the thing up, say three words, grunt three words out, and get back in his Corvette. You'd never see him again, right? It was gone. And there was that. You didn't get that sense that these guys were a part of it. Though these guys were, if they were going home, they were taking the cup with them to, you know, their respective hometowns, but they were also back here with it, and it was back here all the time. And so the cup was making its own appearances.
Right. I remember getting just about nightly texts, because they're just hockey guys are regular dudes. So mm-hmm. I would get texts from, like, hey, we're at the bar, we saw so-and-so, and they had the cup with them. It was like all summer long. It was like it was the tour of Stanley Cup throughout Chicago, and everybody had a story.
I got left alone with the cup.
Whoa.
That was the weirdest moment ever. Yes.
How does that happen?
It was here at the stadium, and I was in an office at the stadium, and the minder of the cup, you know, the guy who's got the 1970s haircut?
Yep.
He's such a good guy.
Yep.
He had to go out and do something. It was, you know, he wears these white gloves. So I'm in this office, they put it on the desk, and I'm back there talking to a bunch of the guys. This is during the opening night, cup ceremony, the opening night.
Wow.
And everybody leaves the room. They're like, we got to go do something. I don't know. He had to go out and do something like for the open of the game. They didn't want to bring the cup out. And they go, you stay here. I mean, they're leaving the biggest mope ever with the Stanley Cup.
All alone with the Stanley Cup.
Right. And it's like, why? And I'm just staring at it. Because it is.
Start slow talking to it.
It's the best trophy in sports.
Oh, without question. Dinged up. Right? There's some misspellings on it, which is even better. That's like a hockey thing. There is you can see, you know, how they build. It's like a wedding cake, right? It's built from the base all the way up, and it will eventually be, 10 feet tall, you know, in the next 100 years. But I don't know how long it seemed like I was there for a day and a half with it. It was probably 5 minutes.
That's awesome, I just
kept thinking, what if, God forbid, somebody comes in and steals this thing, and I'm standing there.
Girl, you were the last one in the
room. Where's the cup? And then I was afraid I was going to try and pick it up, and I thought, no, I can't do that. Because if I drop it?
And also, if somebody walks in while you're holding it, it's that awkward moment, like you just got caught doing something you're not supposed to. It didn't mean anything. I just wanted to see how it felt.
Right, because you know you're not supposed to put it over your head if you didn't play, right? So it's sort of like, I didn't. I just want to say
smart move.
Yeah, no, it was a really special moment. Time for me to tell you that our live broadcast from the United Center before the Hawks take on. Oh, I love this. For the Hawks take on. Who are they taking on tonight? Who cares?
The Lightning?
Yeah, whatever. is brought to you by Ditch Witch Midwest, your partner for trenchers, cable plows, and directional drills since 1970. Since 1970, they've been doing directional drilling. That is what's going on here, my friends.
Only the necessities.
5 years, 50 years, 50 years, 50 years of trenching and directional drilling and cable plowing.
They're having a good run.
They are having a good run. I love them. It's my favorite. It's absolutely my favorite sponsor. It's like, you know, when you have these sponsorships, you think to yourself, well, okay, I might use this product. I have no idea what I would do with any of these things.
But they brought you a hat.
They did. They brought me a hat last year because I get so excited about this particular thing. So it's very great. It's very great. It's very, very fun.
We should get all those things and do it so we know what we're talking about.
You know what? We should go out and actually, I mean, to just drive around. I'd like to maybe just for a weekend take the cable plow for, you know.
Experiment a little bit.
And drive around.
Right. I didn't know the cables needed plowing.
Yep. How are you going to bury a cable?
Yeah, you got to plow and then you got to drop the cable.
Now, the directional drill, I got to tell you something. You pull up to somebody's house with that thing, that's going to be a little intimidating. You know? They got everything. And a trencher. Like, I mean, do you need a trench? You might need a trench.
Trencher sounds fun, though.
Hey, these days for home security, why not?
Right. Because you never know. You might want to just trench your way through. You might build a moat, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, we could do that.
Put Chance the Snapper in there.
Yeah, a bunch of them. Yeah. I know it's very popular. And snakes. Snakes and alligators in the moat. I like the idea.
I love it.
It's all good.
Just make sure they're swimming snakes. Otherwise, they're pointless.
Lauren's an expert in that department.
It'd be a very, very short run. Snake had a short run.
Turns out the snakes can't swim. So,
as God is my witness, I thought snakes could swim.
Some can. Some can.
But do you know the difference?
I don't know which one specifically. I know the water moccasin is one of the deadly ones, and they can swim.
Oh, that'd be a good one to have.
Don't mess with the water moccasin.
You really want those around your house, though? I don't think so.
Ooh, no.
Yeah, the kids can want
the dog
those.
Gets loose, runs out the front door chasing the mailman, ends up in your trench filled with snakes.
Comes up in your toilet through plumbing.
Right, exactly. All right, well, I'll work this out because I think that the trenching, I'll talk to the trenching people. We'll figure it out. They're all going to be fine. Did I tell you about the Christmas show? Have I told you about the Christmas show yet?
Yes, no. A little bit, but I want to know more.
All right, thank you for asking. December 6th, we are going to be in Tinley Park at the Tinley Park Convention Center. Check. Now, we are doing that for Toys for Tots. This is the 23rd time we've gone out and done a Christmas show for Toys for Tots, and not all of us together, but the 23rd time I've done it. Now it's the number of times for Kevin, and this will be your first one, mm-hmm. Lauren.
That's why I'm so excited.
You won't believe this when you're done with it. You just won't believe it. And the Ides of March have been with me for about 10 of these. They always bring it. It is a ton of fun. You get to see Jim Peterik in all his glory and all those songs. And he does not just Ides of March songs, but you also get Survivor and 38 mm-hmm. Special and
nice.
All the rest of the stuff that Jim Peterik does because he wrote all those things.
I mean, last year's show was just one of the most fun nights we've had. It was incredible.
Yes. And we've had some fun nights, have we not?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So when you put that in perspective, and that's really what this is. And the beauty this year is because this is the Tinley Park Convention Center, we have plenty of room. We have plenty of space to do this. If you want to bring the toys, we've got the Marines that are going to be just standing there waiting to take the toys from you. And then they will also be presenting the Canarba Wagon in the 5 o'clock hour. That's going to be something.
Big presentation.
When the United States Marine Corps presents the Canarba Wagon, the Canarba Wagon has been presented.
I'm super pumped for this because you're hyping this even to me off the air.
I did this show at the Tinley Park Convention Center in 2000, and it was one of those moments where you just feel the electricity in the air because it's a beautiful room and we had so many people there and everybody had an opportunity to take part in it. You know, there's no. Yeah, that's the great sight lines and all that. And the Marines did something with the Canarba Wagon, which we then heard later from a guy with brass on his shoulders about the use of his Marines.
You guys did what?
Right. It was peacetime. That's what I told the guy. We weren't at war.
It was peacetime.
It was like You know, I mean, we did worse things once we went to Warren with the Carnarvon wagon. Things we, unspeakable things, things we can't talk about. Things for, you know, it's unfortunate things with the Carnarvon wagon.
Jeez.
The Carnarvon wagon should actually have its own coffee table book. Is what it should have.
There's really no room, though. It's full of bottles.
That's true. Well, I would like to, just the stories of the Carnarvon wagon, where it's been, what it's done, things that Lee Ermey did to it, things that he did on it. Oh my God. Anyway, maybe we'll tell some of those. So it's a live broadcast from 3 to 5:30, and then from 5:30 on, it's a live concert with us and the Ides of March and all that. Maybe Lauren will do it. Maybe Lauren and Richard Roper will do their... their Game of Thrones song. I don't know. We'll see.
You should also, I know you've done it a million times, but give the background of the Carnarvon. Do you know the background of the Carnarvon?
I don't, actually.
See?
Yeah, that's
still
the perfect story to tell.
I will definitely do that.
Classic radio tease. Find out the origin of the Carnarvon wagon at the Christmas show / holiday show / whatever you're celebrating this holiday season show. We don't want to offend anybody.
Exactly.
This is legal here.
Right, exactly. I got a Kwanzaa hat that I wear. I got a whole thing. I'm ready to go.
Check all the holiday
boxes. I got it. You want some for Hanukkah? It's good. I got my Hanukkah thing that I, you know, I got it. I got a dreidel. Just whatever you need. We can make it. Just want to make it. We don't want to. All you need is Canadian Club. That's how it all started on the Carnarvon wagon. It was just a bottle of Canadian Club, and that was it.
Wow.
That's what they drank at the City Hall press room. That's as much as I will tell you about the origin story of the Carnarvon wagon. All right, here he is. Adam Burrish is with us. He's a Chicago Blackhawks Stanley Cup champion from 2010. We were just talking to Soupy, one of your teammates, about this. And, of course, now NBC Sports. You are the NBC Sports Chicago. You're sitting there on the desk every night trying to get these guys who say, yeah, I played a little hockey back in the day. I'll kind of tell their stories. And then you get to go, yeah, I got a ring. Yeah, don't worry about it. Your 2010 story, you know, I asked Soupy this question about that flight back from Philadelphia. Yeah. Like, you're sitting there, none of you had won a Stanley Cup before.
Right.
And there you are, and it's in the plane with you. Were you going back and looking at it? What were you doing?
I don't know what Soupy told you, but what I remember probably most about that whole since we won till when we got home was that flight home. And it was really quiet. It was probably the quietest time that the locker room was a circus, beers, champagne going everywhere, smoking cigars. Once we landed, it was a zoo for 2 weeks. It was madness. But the plane ride was probably the most – I think I had one beer the whole two-hour ride home. And, yeah, I've got some cool pictures on my computer at home. One of them, it was just Taves with his arm around the cup and his arm around the Conn Smythe trophy just sitting there, and he's staring at the Stanley Cup trophy just like, oh, my gosh. And then four guys would be pockets of four guys just kind of talking like, can you believe this right now? Can you believe what just happened? Remember 3 years ago when there was 2,500 people in the United Center at the games when we couldn't give tickets away, when our friends were saying like, we're busy on Friday night. We don't want to watch a Hawks game, to where we are now.
Yeah.
And it wasn't there wasn't beers sprayed all over the plane. It was more just kind of like you said, holy crap, the Stanley Cup's on the plane with us right now. What just happened?
And then the reception when you guys get home. You mentioned the 2 weeks of craziness, but we've been talking about that whole summer was a celebration around Chicago. Everybody had a story of encountering the cup at a bar or seeing one of you guys out at a bar. What was that like?
It wasn't that. That was another very memorable thing for me. Was you're nice to say to see us out, but it wasn't about us. It was about the cup. Everybody wanted to see the Stanley Cup.
It's the people's trophy.
It is. They wanted to drink out of it. They wanted to get a picture with it. So I always say you could have put the president in the room with us, and nobody would have cared that he's there. Vince Vaughn came out with us all the time to some raunchy, stupid nightclubs that he never would have gone to because he would have got bothered. He was a bigger star than we were, but he would come out with us because nobody cared about it. Nobody cared to see him. Nobody cared.
Right.
They wanted to see the Stanley Cup, and I don't think until any of us experience that, you know how big it is, but until you're there with it, you see it, it's polarizing to people. And that was the coolest part to us, was we just ran around the city like a bunch of yahoos and had fun, and we had cops were getting mad at us because you guys are shutting down streets, you got to let us know where you're going. It was a circus. It was really neat.
And we also talked about this with Brian, how I mean, you mentioned the dark days when there was you could sit anywhere you wanted if you came to a game. It sort of felt like you guys brought hockey back to Chicago I mean, it's always, there was generational fans, but for a while there, it was pretty rough. You guys really kind of brought this thing back.
It felt that way. I think looking back on it now, I know myself personally, you feel kind of proud about that we saw it when it was ugly here, and fair enough, the team wasn't good. My first year and a half here, we were terrible. We were out of the playoffs probably by February, maybe All-Star break one year. So I don't blame the fans for that. And then you have to win. You got to produce. You got to play fun hockey, and we started doing that, and we had a lot of great personalities. The organization let us be ourselves. We were young kids. We were dummies a lot of nights, and they just kind of let us run and cause trouble. They let us be ourselves, and so I think people enjoyed that personalities got to show, and we had a pretty darn good hockey team too.
And I thought one of the nicest pieces of that was that you had the Hull Makita, Stan Makita was still alive, and Bobby Hull was still very actively kind of out with the team, and this was, he was basically handing off the trophy essentially to your team. And that was, to me, it was such a cool thing growing up with those guys as my heroes. And then to have Kane and Taves essentially be them, on a grander stage. Yeah. It's just, NHL hockey is an international sensation now,
yep,
right? And because of the network television contract and all the things that people, they understand the game.
Yep.
And there's a way, and it is the best live sporting event you could possibly go to, bar none, in terms of experience in a stadium.
It was cool for us when those guys started coming around a lot. And I think we knew how big, as hockey players, we knew how big of stars they are and what they did in Chicago and as the game. But I think, people like you, Ro, and fans that were watching this team 20 years ago, 30 years ago, growing up watching them, you guys kind of taught us how big of legends these guys really were. We all see Kane and Taves. That's who we know. We weren't alive when Stan Mikita was lighting the league on fire.
Right.
We knew his
Thanks
legend.
Thanks for reminding me, Adam.
You're not that old, bro. But, I remember a game when they introduced them all, and they all skated on the ice together. I was injured that game, so they were getting dressed in the locker room while the players had already left. And I stopped them and I said, can I get a picture with you guys right now, all in your equipment, all in their uniform? I put on Tony Esposito's mask and took a picture with him. And it was just, it was a really special thing. And I think that was another thing that really ignited what happened around here.
Don't you just want to grow up to be Tony Esposito? I mean, when you see him now, he's so,
so cool.
Elegant, right?
Yeah.
He's got that way of, he's got that calm about him that is just like, excuse me, I'm making a phone call, that is just so, that's a guy who's a great ambassador, one of the great princes of the sport. So.
He's cool, and he's everywhere. I mean, you come to a game, you will see Tony Esposito. He'll be signing something.
Yep.
He'll be taking his
Nicest
time with
guy.
People. He'll be having a cool tie on and a nice pocket square.
And then he close talks you.
Yep.
He'll lean in, and he'll talk to you low, and you're going like, oh, my God, it's Tony Esposito. I can smell his breath. All right, Adam Burrish, we'll see you on TV. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks,
appreciate
bro.
It. Thanks for being with us. All right, we have got coming up here in just a few minutes. We got the news at the top of the hour. Oh no, we actually just straight to hockey. What am I saying? There would be not news. I'm sitting right here in the United Center. How dumb am I that I cannot remember exactly what's going to be happening?
What's your name again?
I know. That's what goes on. I get so excited around. It's just such a moment to remember. That whole run, and we're talking about 10 right now because it's the 10th anniversary
right.
of it, obviously, but. 13 was amazing, and 15 was.
That was when we were starting to get used to it and expecting it.
Well, that was part of the problem. We went to the convention that following year, and we're sitting there in the in our salon at the Hilton Chicago, one of the fine sponsors of the Christmas show, by the way. And all of us were sitting there, and what were we staring at? As all the fans, as the people were walking in, there's the Stanley Cup, there's the Conn Smythe Trophy, there's the everything that the
all
Hawks
the
had won, all the hardware, and they'd won everything
a lot
that
yeah.
year. I mean, that was insane. I mean, it's just.
It's been a great decade.
It really has. And you can the feeling you get when you're watching Kirby Doc and you're watching Alex Brinkat and you're watching these kids that are coming up and you still got, the wise old men on the team with them.
Right.
And then you got to I'm sorry. I got to call my mom. the thing that you can't get out of your head is they really do have a right talent mix, and especially with two great goaltenders.
Yeah,
this could, you know, you
well,
never
you gotta,
know what
could
happen.
You got to figure
here.
Both of those, whatever you want to call them, core, the younger core, the veteran core, how much they push each other.
Yeah,
the veteran's going to get pushed by the younger Kirby Doc, and the younger guys are going to try to make the older guys proud, or whatever you want to call it,
right,
or play to
impressive.
Their level. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they have the resume. So if you're new to the team, I think that probably pushes you, and then vice versa for the veterans, where they know guys are really fighting to make a career in the NHL.
And you got to remember that Canyon Taves last year, in what ended up being a losing effort for the season, had record years.
Yes.
For themselves.
Yeah.
So they're not done.
No.
And then you've got these young kids who are just spectacular. Kirby Doc may end up being the MVP of the NHL before this is, you know, all said and done in his career.
He may be our next franchise player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's sign. I want to be his agent, and we want to sign him to a 100-year deal is what we want to do. Because I'm telling you, man, that kid is spectacular to watch. All right. So if you're coming to the game, the lot E is now closed. It's an Uber lot. But you can Uber easier to get in and out now. Just check your Uber app, and you can figure that all out. And we're going to bring home a win, and we'll be back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. So I want everybody to sit back and enjoy Chicago Blackhawks hockey on 720 WGN. And we're going to bring home a win against this Tampa Bay team that I cannot stand.